Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, April 2nd, 2018. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern until midnight. If you're listening live over another network and you would like to ask a make a comment or ask a question, you can call in at 605-475. Someone needs to mute their mic. 475-3250. Access code is 449-389. That's 449-389. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. That's questions, plural, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Tonight's scripture reading is going to pick up from where we left off last, which is Matthew chapter 26, verse 31 through 46. But it's Matthew 36, verses 31 through 46. Then saith Jesus unto them, All ye shall be offended because of me this night. For it is written, I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered abroad. But after I am risen again, I will go before you into Galilee. Peter answered and said unto him, Though all men shall be offended because of thee, yet will I never be offended. Jesus saith unto him, Truly I say unto you, that this night before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. Peter said unto him, Though I should die with thee, yet will I not deny thee. Likewise also said all the disciples. Then cometh Jesus with them, unto a place called Gethsemane, and said unto the disciples, Sit ye here, while I go and pray yonder. And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. Then said he unto them, My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here, and watch with me. And he went a little further, and fell on his face, and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou will. And he cometh unto the disciples and find them sleeping, and saith unto Peter, What, could ye not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. He went away again, and a second time, and prayed, saying, O my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me, except I drink it, thy will be done. And he come and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them, and went away again, and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Then cometh he to his disciples, and saith unto them, Sleep on now, and now for and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. Behold, he is at hand that doeth betray me. Matthew chapter 26, verses 31 through 46. Okay, let's see. We filed the New York action today. It's filed, I think it was early this afternoon or late this morning. And we haven't brought it over to the sheriff. We'll be bringing it over to the sheriff tomorrow for serving onto the House, both houses, and to the governor. As soon as I receive the original papers, we have right now the action is already posted up there under the news. Excuse me. Under news. Let me go take a look and see exactly where it's at. I know it's under the news tab. But if you highlight the news tab, you come down, you'll see New York Safe Act lawsuit. So anybody that hasn't read it yet or would like to look at it, it's there now. And some other information. As soon as we get the filed paperwork, we'll file up a copy with the stamps and the seals and the index number on it, and people will be able to follow the case. And of course, anything we do or get, we will post on this page so people can follow along. Whenever any activity happens, we'll send out an email. We'll do it national because I think everybody's interested in this case, not just New Yorkers. You have to be a New Yorker to file. You have to live in New York to file. In any event, again, the effects of this case, and I don't see any way they can win. They'll have to try to find a way to throw us out, and we're going to be very careful and watchful of that, and we may consider other things more serious if they did do something like that. We'll do something very serious with the grand jury, maybe. But we'll do everything we can first to make sure we stay in the court. They already have a meeting set up. Goodness, I forget what date that was. I didn't take a note on that. Jen, see if you can find James and unmute him, and maybe he can tell us the date. There is a date. We will post that date. We'll send an email. We got about, goodness, I think they gave himself like about 6 weeks or something, a long period of time. In fact, longer than that, I think 90 days. 90 days to a hearing. Now, I'm anticipating in those 90 days that they fulfill their answer. We did make that point in the paper. We do demand an answer. There's no possible way they can answer. There's just no way. I can't even think of the words they might want to try to use to try to answer. Find James? Hey, James, what is the date and the time, and what information do we have on that yet as far as that conference for this case?
It's July 2nd. And let me
I should have remembered you said exactly 90 days, right? July 2nd, okay.
Yeah, let me... now you want to know the time of day. Well... I just noticed it was July 2nd. I didn't really notice the time of day.
Okay. Is it on the paperwork?
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. I'm not quite sure if it's... Yeah. Okay, I'll pipe in then.
Just pipe up when you find it. Mute yourself, and when you find it, unmute yourself. And,
oh, here it
just
is.
Give
10:30 a.m., Albany, New York, in front of Magistrate Judge Christian F. Hummel. That's with an H. All right.
Christian or Christian? Is he Christian?
Christian.
Almost like Christ,
yep.
Like a Christian?
Yeah, oh, yeah, Christian. Yep.
Hummel, how can you spell his last name?
H-U-M-M-E-L.
Okay. We will post all this information. James will be mailing all this paperwork to me tomorrow morning, and unless he's already thrown it in the mail. And we'll be serving we'll be getting it over to the sheriff's office tomorrow, and hopefully they'll serve probably the next day, or if we're lucky, they'll serve the same day. and we'll see where that goes. We're really expecting everyone in New York that signed up for this case to be here on July 2nd for this case.
Hey,
I'm looking to see
John,
what day that falls onto. Yeah.
Are we able to take more people in until they reach a point and the judge says it's set, or we're not doing that?
Yeah, we're going to be able to take more people in. Just to know, it's July 2nd is a Monday, so it's a Monday. That's pretty interesting. But,
okay,
yes,
so anybody in New York? So anybody
yeah,
in New York
I'll talk
that
about
wants,
that in a minute.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I just wanted
to bring that up. Thanks.
So I want to make sure. Look, I can't promise people are going to get in. I do know one thing. We can add – we're going to make an addendum because for the wherefore clause. I can't believe I missed this, but after everything was printed out and James was down here on Saturday, and I handed him all the paperwork, and I realized that I did not put in real money. We want $50,000 in real money. We don't want any of that funny money. We want gold. We want it in face value of silver or gold. And so I think we'll ask for gold, just gold. And we will quote the Constitution, you know. And that way also the IRS won't come out after anybody concerning that money, because gold and silver is not taxed. It is not taxed, nor is it is looked at as income. If you get money and then buy gold or silver, they'll try to get you for that tax. If you were to sell it, they will try to get you for that tax. But if you're given the gold and it transfers between two people, there is no tax on that. So, but in any event, also...
I think they have to tax it at face value, John. I think it is taxable, but at face value.
Well, I've heard that it's not.
Oh, well, I know that that one guy...
What I heard, you know... Go ahead.
The guy that was paying his employees in gold and silver, they were ticked off because he was paying it in legal tender, because they do print gold and silver because it's in the Constitution. So there are gold and silver coins that are legal tender that are in circulation, and that's what he was paying them with. But you know, it might cost you $3,000 to buy a 1 ounce piece or a $50 gold piece, but the government can only count that as $50.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem. First of all, you know, they do whatever they want to do, even if it's even if they can't do it, they do it. And bar lawyers are not going to argue that point, because they're going to be obedient to their masters. That's number one. The other thing is, remember, he's still taking real money to buy that money, and that's probably where they're making the connection. Number one. Number two, they're claiming he's their employees, and he's an employer. And he needs to file. And again, whether that's true or not, it's irrelevant. They come out after you anyway. Look, if the IRS wants you, all they do is they look into your bank account. If they can get into your bank account, if they can squeeze into that and see that you got $5,000 or $20,000 or $50,000 or whatever you got in that bank account, all of a sudden they want all of that. They will come out after you for that $50,000, as if that the whole thing is taxed to begin with. And they don't care where it came from. I know this because that's how they came out after me, and they come out after everyone that way. But in any event, you know, the guy who I heard it from, and he seemed pretty positive, and you know, I'm not, I don't really put a lot of merit into this guy anymore. But certain things I think he's good on, and that's that guy Lindsay. Remember that guy Lindsay, up with the oil, the pastor or something up in the oil field up there in Alaska?
Yeah, Lindsay.
Yeah.
Lindsay,
that's
Frank,
the guy who spoke about the elite told him, no, gold and silver is not tax. That's our money. He didn't even use real money. He didn't even use the, you know, real money or the people's money. But it's our money, like they own it. And so there is no tax on that. Anyway, that's what I heard. In any event, we want gold anyway. And just think about that. We want $50,000 in gold. I don't know how many dollars it takes to do $50,000 in gold, but that's what we're going for. And so we're going to change the wherefore clause. I'm going to do that this week. I think I have one or two people that missed the boat on it. I'm not sure whether I got them in. When I go through the list, I'll find out, and I'll put them in at that point. Anybody else that wants into this case, you're going to want to let me know right away. I mean, hey, get out to the donation page and look for our fax number and fax a copy of all your papers, okay, to me. You know, you get your affidavit done, get that other paper filled out, fax it to me, and just let me know that you're going to put the originals into the mail with $50. And then you can mail that. This way I'll get your name in this week, maybe by the end of the week. So anybody that's in New York, that lives in New York, and wants to get into the case, you can do that. Now, until we, you know, the rules of the court is, as long as they haven't answered, it's not a problem adding things or changing things. Maybe if you're getting real close, they may try to make a stink about it. Like, you know, let's say they're planning to answer in 2 days, and I just send it out, and they're getting, and it crosses in the mail some information that changes things, and that could be a problem. So, and I don't want to run into that kind of a problem or argument. I mean, we will hold our grounds on that, but I don't think people should wait 30 days to get in if they want to get in. If you want to get in, you better get in now. And again, whenever people send in information that they want to get in, and I get their affidavits, I'll get them in, and we'll send it out. But at some point, they're going to cut us off, and if that's what happens to certain individuals because you were too late, there's nothing I could do about that. Again, we'll make our best argument we can on that. But anyway, that's one of the changes we're going to make, and we're going to make a change in the wherefore clause concerning the how we want to get our money. So we're talking $50,000 in money, real money, not funny money. So anyway, that's that for that. And again, we will put everything up on the website. We will be notifying people. I was just going to notify New York people, but it's going to go national. Anytime we make a change up there, anytime we receive papers or we file papers and we put it up on the website, we're going to send an email out letting people know that, you know, there's been some exchange of information in the case and you might want to go up and read it. If you haven't read through the case, you certainly should go read through the case. And I think it's an extremely powerful case. And they don't have a leg to stand on. There's no way they can make the argument. Look, they're going to have to try to have us thrown out some way. You know, I'm glad we decided to go with the sheriffs here. I want to thank James for putting out the money for that. But we went with filing this. We're going to be filing with the sheriffs. And they're not going to be able to say, oh, they didn't get served right or some stupid thing like that. They always do that. But when the sheriff serves them, it's over. They're not even going to bring that issue up. The other thing, about three different issues they'll try to kick us out on. I already know that what they're going to try to do. One of the issues is they're going to try to say we don't have a cause of action. Well, let me tell you, we are crystal clear with our cause of action. We mentioned the elements that's involved in the cause of action, what this is about, and we've listed one, two. There were three elements in our causes of action. We laid it out right on the paper. We made it clear, and we kind of emboldened it. So it's already in there very, very clearly. And if they try to make that case, which they probably will because that's what they do, anything to try to get out of this thing, anything to throw smoke into the game. But we will respond very simply with just a couple of lines referring back to exactly where that cause of action is, you know. Another way they'll try to throw us out, which there's no way they're going to be able to do it with this one, is no standing, okay? People get thrown out with no standing because they don't even know how to battle or go up against that. And there is clear language within our law concerning standing, and we qualify 100%. If you're injured, you got standing, period, nothing to talk about. Another thing they'll try to throw us out on is the fact that, you know, I came in as a lead individual, Gerard and myself, on this case. We're going to have a meeting probably on this case very soon.
You're missing your husband. He's on a national show.
Hello.
Oh, sorry.
Someone's unmuted here. Anyway, I forget where I was at. Where was I at? Does anybody remember?
You're talking about us coming in as the lead.
As the lead individuals for the case, okay?
Right.
But look at what we want to be careful about, and we're going to have some meetings on this, and if people want to come up to sit at the front with us and maybe, you know, work to voice some opinions, they got to have some knowledge to begin with to be able to do that. We don't want to look like a bunch of idiots. And one of the big things we want to be real careful about, because a lot of people still have problems getting this stuff out of their brain. We're not in their sandbox. We're in our sandbox, and they're coming to play in our sandbox. We don't need to talk about being a citizen, a man on the land, or any of that stuff. So we don't want any of that language into this court that would, you know, confuse this case and, again, cause problems. You bring up the argument, then we're going to have to deal with that. They'll never bring it up, so why should we? And if it comes up, it is what it is. It's fraud, period. End of subject. It's a lie. It's fraud. It's unconstitutional, and it violates us. And so we could lay that stuff out quite clearly. So, again, we do want to communicate with the people who are in this case. We will post everything we get and send an email out. Our way of emailing people is through our membership. So anybody who's come into this case that is not a member of National Liberty Alliance, they're not going to be getting our email. So they need to join up to NLA. And if they really don't want their name on it, you know, they can unjoin later. But, you know, hey, it's time to take a stand anyway. You know, We'll notify everyone. But it will be a national run. We'll start pushing for courtroom observers. I'd like to see people coming in from Pennsylvania that aren't too far away, Connecticut, and so on. But if people are going to travel, you've got to be very careful. I am going to make it a point the week before the case to get in touch with the judge, and maybe we'll even go down and talk with him, to make sure that this case is not going to play a game with us, because they've done this before on us. We have all the people ready to travel and everything, heading up to Albany, and they change the day. And they don't even tell us in time. We're up there, and we find out that I didn't even get the messages yet, you know? And this is a game they're playing. We're not going to tolerate that, and we're going to make that clear to the judge. We'll send a letter to the judge, make it very, very clear, and we'll require a written response from him to understand that people are going to be traveling from various places all over New York and from other states for this particular case. And we expect to be treated, righteously. And we're not, you know, if you want to change this date, you better give us a week's notice. Okay, once we're in that week, that's it. We don't want to know nothing about it. We're coming up, and it doesn't matter what the weather is like, or we're going to be there. All right, so we're going to make that very, very strong with these people. We're not going to let them get away with it. people up in the New England area, if you want to travel down for that day, it's a Monday. Maybe you come down on a Sunday if you're traveling far and you want to stay over the night in Albany and for the Monday case and head back or whatever. If people want to come in from other states, Connecticut's next door to us. Pennsylvania and Jersey's not too far, depending on where you live in Pennsylvania, of course. And, of course, everyone in New York should come. It's up in the Albany area, so it's kind of, a four-hour run across the state from that point, Gerard, if I remember? Probably about a four-hour run.
To where?
And heading across the state from Albany, heading out to Binghamton, heading out to Niagara or something. It's probably a good 4 hours, right?
It's 6 hours to Niagara, but Buffalo's about 4-5 hours.
Okay. All right, well, people in New York know how long it is to get to Albany.
If you're out on the end, it's 6 hours. If you're out by Niagara, it's 6 hours.
I thought it took me 6 hours to do the run. It takes me a good hour to get to Albany.
It's 6 hours. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I do have a little bit of a heavy foot, so. All right. Anyway, that's it for the New York case, and I'm really excited about this case. And
we need
people.
Before you're done.
All right. We need lots and lots of people to come. Obviously, all the people that are on, that are named in this should definitely be there if they can. And we understand in some cases people can't make it. But we want as many people as possible. We want them to have to move us to the biggest room. You know, last time we did something like this, we filled the room. We had standing room only. Let's do it again, and let's have them roll out the doors. Let's everybody bring make sure they bring their tags or something. You know, you're a jury. You could be a jury member or a grand jury member or what do they call some of the things
press,
we had?
Press.
Huh? Well, the press, but
the
there's
press,
also another
press.
One, a courtroom observer. That's this courtroom observer. You know that we have the tags for that. If you want to be a grand jury member or whatever, whatever tags you want to wear, it'd be helpful. You don't have to wear a tag, but it'd be helpful to put a tag on and your name on it. Get a nice looking card. You can download them right offline. We got it up on our website. I forget where it's at, but I'm sure it's under the grand jury area. And but we want as many people as possible. We want everyone to bring paper and pen, and we want everybody to make notes, and we want everyone to write an affidavit of what they heard. You know, we have a form up there. We'll make sure there's a form on the page, on the New York page, for those people who are going to make affidavits out. And it'll be just the header and the footer. And then you just say what happened, took place in the courtroom, what was said, what the judge said, and whatever anybody else said, and so on and so forth. Okay, that's all I got on that case. You wanted to speak a little bit on this, Gerard?
I just want to let you know that a 1 ounce American Gold Eagle proof, which is a $50 piece. It's its value is stamped $50. Mm-hmm. It will cost you $1,300 if you go there and pick it up, or $13.88 if you have it sent FedEx. So if you're going to require gold, are you going to require face value? Or are you going to require...
Well, that's what I'm thinking. That's
yeah,
the 50 times 1300.
It's going to cost them $500,000 a piece, John.
Well, let's see what that works out to be.
Come on.
Well,
50,
that's not my fault.
A $50 gold piece is worth $1,300. So if you want $50, if you want 50,000 in face value gold, you got to...
$55 million a piece.
Yeah.
Is that right? Can that be possibly right? Let me try this again. $50,000 times 1,300, right? Each gold piece is actually $20, isn't it?
$1.3 million.
Yes, because
is that what it is? $1.3 million. Well, maybe we should give him a break. That's a little too much. I'm having a good time with this, but that's a little too much. we'll have to.
Government can only consider. You know what? Coming from the government, they only could consider the face value. I'm telling you, because that's what they took. That's why they got mad at that guy, because they can only charge those people face value of those coins, which most of them were under the reporting.
That's right. That's their problem. So
we'll
be obscure about it, okay? $50,000
in
gold.
In gold.
We'll
see what they
do.
Believe me, they're going to go to
the lower. We'll come back up to with our hands open and cupped and say, more?
Hey, that's a nice deposit. Keep going.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, we're going to change that. I don't think there's anything else. I'm going to be reading through it again tomorrow and make sure there's nothing else. We have to do an addendum to make some kind of a change in it. But that's the only thing I think I recall. From the one that's up right now and the one that we filed, there's been some changes. Okay, not a lot, but there's probably, probably about this additional maybe 8 to 10 lines, if I recall. But whatever it is, everyone will get the original shortly, as soon as we get the papers back from, Jim gets it up to us through the mail. So I guess he's going to be dropping that in the mail tomorrow. I should get it maybe in a day or so. So by the end of the week, we'll have the original papers with, the case number on it and the stamped file and, all the things necessary. What we want people to do is to download that and do press releases. We're going to set up a page for a press release, okay? And if people can get that to their news, okay, you don't have to go there. You can just call them up and find out who handles press release. They'll give it to the person. They'll probably just say email it or fax it. And then if you could fax and email the press release, which we'll put together, and a front copy of the page that has that's filed, okay, which would be the front page of the action, okay. And in a press release, it's going to make the note that there's going to be a hearing on July. Yeah, July 2nd. So we'll make put that into the. Press release that there's going to be here in July 2nd at 10:30, blah, 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 So maybe we'll get some press up there, and maybe we'll get a lot of people up there. It should generate a lot of interest, and if anybody belongs to some gun clubs or something, they need to let these people know. And matter of fact, you should get out there real quick and let them know if they want to join in. There's limited time. Get up to our page and join in, Fill out an affidavit and get it to us. But whether they join in or not, we want as many people as we can up to this case. All right, I guess I'm done with that. And you're done with it too, right, Gerard? Good.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see what else we got going here. Couple of things. We're still working on the book. It's going to be a little longer than I'm expecting, but we're working. I'm working day and night on it. And the course, I got to talk with Carl about this. Carl's going to have to check in to see. I'd like to start to get the course up maybe in the next week or so, but I won't be able to get the whole course up. But if I can get a couple of chapters up there where people can start taking the course, The big question comes is what happens when they hit the end, when it's not really the end and we have more to add on? How would we do that? Maybe we would make that page, the next page, unavailable and would kind of stall them out, and if there's a way to do that. I don't know. But I don't know the nature of how this thing works. Maybe Carl will know or can find out. And if he doesn't have the knowledge on that, maybe we can give a call to the people that you know, that take care of our site, and maybe they can tell us. But I do want to start posting this this course up as soon as possible. Anybody who's interested in that course, again, in order to join the course, we're requiring you to be a premier member. In other words, someone that's given $5 a month or more, and you can join the course. We're still considering it a free course, but we're looking for the donations to support NLA. Every administrator, anybody that's running to be an administrator, we have over 1,000 people there. This course is a requirement. And now if someone is really, really, you know, that bad off and they don't have the $5 a month, they really can't afford it. And I do know there are some people that are in that kind of a situation. And I appreciate that. You know, if you get a hold of Jan and let them know that you just can't afford it and you'd like to be in the course, and we'll work out a way to fix that so we can kind of flip a switch and you can get in and take the course. We don't want to deny anyone. But we do think at some point people have to start supporting what we're doing financially because we need money. We need to sue. We need to go after the judiciary. And you know who we really need to go after? We need to go after these people for subversion against the United States of America, for teaching subversion and destroying our nation, and that is the Bar Association. We need to go after them. I'm dying to file a paper on those people. And again, they're not going to be able to answer the things that we've got. We will win those cases. They will try to kick us out all ways that they can, you know, as we mentioned, but they're not going to be able to get away with it. We're not going to let them get away with it. And again, the worst comes the worst. If they really play this game and again play hardball with us, then it's time maybe to call the grand jury to consider what's going on up there. Okay, so let's move on from there. Okay, so a couple of cases we'd love to do. Once we start to get more money in, we're going to start some cases. I got to go after the judiciary. We also have to go after the election districts, Board of Elections, all 50 states' Board of Elections, both Democrat and Republican. We need to sue them all. And that's going to be a big case because that's going to involve 100 servings, okay? And I think it's going to be important to use the sheriff to make those servings. Maybe we'll ask for volunteers at that point for the serving itself to take the paperwork and bring it to the local sheriff in the capital and serve it on to the Democratic and Republican parties for the Board of Election. But we have to sue them to take back control of the political process. In the book I'm writing, we're doing one chapter on the committee and how they stole the political process away from the people and how it really was meant to be. How our political process was really meant to be. Our political process was never meant for people to have two different sides to fight, to get one group to get an edge over another person, you know, another group, shall I say. You know, that's politics, and it's dirty stuff. It has nothing to do with what we're doing here and with what our political process should be. You know, Washington was clear on this and some others. Jefferson also, I believe, had something to say about this kind of a thing. If the legislators are just legislating what we've given them authority to legislate, there is no special interest group involvement. There is no special group pushing for this or pushing for that to get leverage here. It just doesn't exist. But they have created a democracy here, and as you know, everybody calls us a democracy. I throw up every time I hear someone call it a democracy, our nation a democracy, and people who you think would know better still call us a democracy. I'm so sick of it, and that's one of the things I think we need to start doing is correcting these people. We need to start, you know, sending messages, emails, or whatever, or leaving information on people's websites that are commenting on these things and refer to us as a democracy, and we need to let them know we're not a democracy. Let's see what our founding fathers had to say about democracy. And so anyway, we cover an entire chapter on that. And that is a lawsuit that we need to get going on soon. Because once we hit that critical mass and we start moving, we want to move right over into the committeemen. And we want to start getting people to run for committeemen. We'll teach people how simple it is to become a committeeman in your neighborhood. And then you get to decide who gets onto the ticket. And the rule of thumb for anyone getting on the ticket is someone who's obedient, knows the Constitution, and then promises to be obedient to it and really mean it, because we're going to take them down. We're going to recall them if they violate that. They're not to go outside. These legislators are not to legislate outside of the power and the authority we've given them in Article 1, Section 8. So we've got to tie them down to that Constitution, chain them down, as Jefferson said. Chain them down to the chains of the Constitution. Okay, let's see what else we have here. I was hoping to get the course out this coming week. It's not going to happen. Well, actually, it was going to be by next Monday, I think. But I don't think that's going to happen. We are working as fast as possible. So we will. Yeah, we can hear you, Gerard. Let's see. I guess that brings to the end anything I have to say. Jed, do we have anyone for announcements?
Not announcements, but we have half a dozen questions tonight.
Okay, let's go for them.
Okay, first question. The judge and the CEO of the bank are in default by almost 300 days. Don't you think we should file a default judgment so I can move forward to get my property back? They have had enough time.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I've got to figure out exactly how to word this. I think we did a show cause, and they didn't respond to that either, and I think that's where we can find a default at. I'll have to go back and see how far we went with this and take it to that next step. I've been talking with James about this, we're going to be working on that this week, whatever paperwork we have to do to try to get to that default. And it's going to have to be filed in two courts, you know, our court, which will take care of that filing. And then we would get you a copy, you know, the individual a copy, probably two copies we'll send them. And one they would keep and the other one they would file in their own court. And then let's see where they go from there. After that, then it's a matter of doing considering indictments at that point then, because there's nowhere else to go. If the courts aren't going to start to obey their own law, then indictments is what has to be done. And that's okay if we pile up indictments. We have a place to store the indictments. That's why we opened this case up here in Albany, New York. It's a depository for all of the things we're serving on our government, serving government, and also for all the indictments that we're doing. We're depositing them up there. We're also, sending information to all these indictments and everything we do. We send it to Jeff Sessions and, again, let him know we need some U.S. attorneys down here. And also to the president. And bear in mind, they're going through, I don't even want to say what I heard. I can't even tell you how many thousands of potential indictments that Jeff Sessions has put together so far. And again, I don't know what the truth is on that, but we do know it's a lot. And so they're going to be behind also. So, hey, we're behind because there's a lot of people need to be, be brought to justice. So I'm kind of resting in the fact that they're going to deal with this at some point in time, but critical mass will force them to deal with it at some point in time also. So one way or the other, it will be dealt with. The question is when, We'll see what happens. All right, any other questions?
Yes, the second question is, a case was originally filed in the federal courts. What are the service requirements if one is to file a fraud upon the courts while acting under the color of law claim against multiple officers of the court in their own personal capacity. I know they each have to be served, but to say this, would they all be part of one claim listed and sued under one heading, or sued individually under different headings when this is related to the same original case? Also, which type of court would one file this case in?
Well, I'm not sure. They're talking about filing a fraud on the court against the judge and others, correct?
Right.
Right. Well, if they're already in a state court, you know, if they're in a state court or a county court and they do that, it has to be moved over into the federal court.
The case is constitutional filed in the federal
issue.
Court.
If it's filed in the federal court, then it gets filed in the federal court again. I'd have to think about how, I guess, you know, in theory, you can add them to the case that you're in, or you can, file it again and, you know, request another number to file it for that particular purpose. Certainly they're not going to want to give it to you for free. They love to charge their money. And that's another thing we have to sue the judiciary for. They got to stop charging us for justice. But in the federal court, you know, I would try to do it right inside that case. That would do a couple of things, and it doesn't matter which way you do it. Either way, the judge would have to be removed from the bench, and someone else would have to take their place. And if you're going to do that, you've got to be very careful, and it's got to be real serious, and you better be right. So be very careful about doing something like that. You want to make sure that you really can show fraud in the court. Now, look at fraud in a court, usually, especially in a constitutional case, can be very, very obvious. When you got the Constitution up against statutes and statutes win, that's a slam dunk. There's nothing to talk about. There's nothing to talk about. Anybody with any kind of common sense knows that's a slam dunk. So that's the kind of thing you really want. If they are, you know, defrauding you, if there's fraud on a case. Now, remember, the only individuals you can go after for fraud on a case ultimately is the judge and the U.S. attorney. I don't think you can go for any other officer in the court. You might be able to. I don't see how that could happen, to be honest, because it's really the judge and the U.S. attorney, whether he's acting as a prosecutor or representing someone, however that is, you know, those are the two offices that you can go after fraud in a case. All right, is there another part to that question?
Don't forget, they both think that they have unqualified immunity. They just announced that for the attorneys too, the U.S. attorneys, that they have immunity. So you know you got that uphill battle.
Well, and there's plenty of court cases to show the fact that, you know, that the Supreme Court has ruled on this numerous times already. They lose their immunity as soon as they break the law, violate their oath, act outside of their jurisdiction. That's it. They've lost it. They have no more protection. Because, after all, they're a criminal at that point. You know, they lose it. Matter of fact, the first order of business, I think, when we go up to against these people up in New York, and we got other cases I went through the same thing with. You know, why should the attorney general be representing? Because that's what they're going to do. The attorney general is going to come up and represent. We're going to deny that. That's wrong. But these people are criminals. They're being charged with doing it in a civil case only because we can't get criminal charges against them. After all, the judges and prosecutors control the jury. How could we go after, anyone in government when you guys are controlling everything? So we can't get in. And so we have to do this civil case. Nevertheless, it's wrong that they get these free lawyers and that I have to pay for them. We have to pay for them. We're going to make an argument against that. They need to go get their own attorneys if they want an attorney. Well, speak up. You know what? They have a duty to speak. The governor has a duty to speak. We shouldn't have to pull him to court to speak. We should ask and he should speak. Okay, and now that we pull him into court, we don't need a filter talking for him. We need the governor down there. Let him speak for himself. He can articulate himself well. I'm sure he knows nothing about the Constitution. I think that's pretty clear. Let Congress come down. Let the state legislators come down, and let's let them speak for themselves. I'd like to hear from them. They have a duty to speak, and their silence and hiding behind a filter, we're going to make that point, that's fraud, because silence is fraud when you have a duty to speak and a subject. They have a duty to speak. So they can't plead, the Fifth Amendment or anything. They can't plead that they don't have to speak about anything. They can't do that. A right to be silent. Okay. What else?
Yes, we have several now for Brent. And I see he's here. Let me unmute him so he can speak.
I got an announcement I want to make, too, before we get to Brent.
You want to do that right now?
Timely announcement that I came across, and I think all our members should, at least our members, ought to be aware of this. I subscribe to a number of channels for alternative news, as everybody should, because you can't use the managed news media, the corporate-controlled news media, so I got five or six of them that I trust. Well, this guy, Greg Hunter, he used to be, I think, an NBC correspondent. They kicked him off because he was too honest, kind of like what they did to Napolitano when he told the truth. So he opened up his own news thing, and he runs it mainly on YouTube, but a couple others since they've been censoring things. So this is what Greg Hunter has his own news thing on YouTube, and he interviewed on the 31st this guy Rob Kirby. And they're heading on YouTube if you want to see this 30-minute presentation. It says, Rob Kirby, money needed for hyperinflation already printed. So anyway, this guy, Rob Kirby, and I'll just read you the blurb that Greg put in under the video. He says, forensic macroeconomic analysis, Rob Kirby says, all the money needed for hyperinflation has already been printed. Kirby contends, it's kind of like having a nuclear war, and people say, where are the bombs going to come from? The bombs are going to come out of their silos. What people can't believe or can't wrap their head around is this, is the notion that the fact that there's $21 trillion or more that's been siloed, so to speak. The money has been created and siloed. We know it's been created because we know it flew through the books of the Department of Defense, the DOD, and the Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD. That's just two government agencies. We're talking about tens of trillions of dollars. We don't know exactly where they are or who controls them. This is why you want to own some tangible stuff. This is why you want to own physical bullion, such as coins and bars, and you want to have them in your control. Now, there's 61 government agencies, and that's just two agencies that absconded with $21 million. We don't know how much money was printed and hidden. It could be 3, 4, 5 times that for all we know. So basically, and if you listen to this, he explains it, at some point we're going to go into hyperinflation, and it doesn't look like we're going to avoid it. So what he's, and there's banks right now in the East, in China and in Europe, trying to buy large quantities of gold, and they cannot get it. Right now you can still buy gold in America. I mean, these guys are trying to buy tons of gold. Well, it's not there. The gold exchange funds, the GLDs, those electronic exchange funds, it's all fraud. There's no gold there. Anyway, there's this fund that the government put in that's top secret, and they use it to pump up the stock market every time, but they're running low. And that's why they've been able to push this thing out this far. He didn't put a date on it, but I'm telling you, in my estimation, it's going to be soon. And I think this summer you're going to see, between the stuff that Trump is doing that's going to really create a constitutional crisis, and this money thing, because, you know, they want some kind of war or something to take the in order to distract from the fact that they've been stealing this money for years and it's coming home to roost. So a word to the wise. You know, if you got any money in the bank, you want to turn it into gold or silver, because they're going to do it on a Friday. You're going to wake up one Monday morning and all the prices will be changed, and your money will be, you know, they won't give you your money. It looks like it's coming very soon. So it's just a warning. You know, people that are in this group should be a little bit more awake than everybody else, and you should be making preparations for this. You know, you want tangible things, not only gold and silver. You want stuff that's valuable that you won't be able to get, you know, in hard times. And I don't know how long it'll last. But and I know Donald Trump has some of his own plans to return some of his money on these corporations he's taken down, but who knows how that's going to go. So just be prepared, stock away some extra stuff. You know, even things like nuts and bolts, you know, we don't make a nut or bolt in this country. I don't know if you know that. They've succeeded in closing all this, not for 20 years we haven't. So you need nuts and bolts to keep your cars going and stuff going. Guess what? If you don't have them on your shelf, or you're not going to get them. So that, I'm not trying to scare anybody, but I'm trying to scare you. Okay? Thank you. I rest.
What was it based on the hurricane in New Orleans? Two things were in high demand were beer and ammunition.
There you go. You don't want to get caught out there with no beer and no ammunition. That's a bad thing.
That's right.
Hey, Rod, you going to take control of the board? Rod?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Now...
Because I'm going to disappear for a little... I haven't eaten yet. I'm dying. I'm hungry. So I'm going to go off for a short while to eat. And I'll be back as soon as I can.
All right, so we've got questions for Brent, right?
Yeah, we're going to move over
to
Brent. So.
Yeah. All right, so let's do that.
Okay, go with the questions for Brent, and then we'll move over to Brent. Go ahead.
Okay.
And for Brent, in your book, Excellence of the Common Law, you cite two biblical accounts which possibly could be used to prove the office of the sheriff is needed. There, when Moses and the Jehoshaphat appointed men to help them in their work, then you also brought in the Anglo-Saxon tradition. Question, after you had written the book, did you think of any more biblical accounts which could prove that the office of the sheriff is biblically based?
Well, the office of the sheriff, if the sheriff has any authority at all, and authority, it cannot be false. Authority is either authority or it's feigned authority. Well, feigned authority is no authority at all. So we start with the fundamental that if the sheriff does have authority, that is, an authority is right. R-I-G-H-T. It is jurisdiction. To put a definition on a little tighter, authority is the right to act respecting a given matter. Authority is the right to act respecting a given matter. And the same definition for jurisdiction. The synonyms overlap almost exactly, but a little bit of different emphasis. Jurisdiction is the right to act respecting a given matter. And right is also the same thing. You have a right, you have jurisdiction. You have a right, you have authority. You have a right, you have a duty. It isn't accompanied by a duty, it is a duty. That's what the old Germanic word means. It still means that in the Germanic tongue. We've tainted the meaning, we've used it so much, we've twisted it. For example, the right to keep and bear arms is a duty. It's not an option. The right to remain silent when it's to be used, it's a duty. The right to speak when you are to speak, First Amendment protected, it is a duty. All of these rights are the duty to act in discernment, to exercise discernment personally and make your own decision. That's what a right is. Oh, don't let get too far on that. But if the authority has, or if the sheriff has authority, and that is right, there's only one place he could have gotten it. Only one. He didn't get it from himself. And if you say, well, he got it from the people of his bailiwick, of his county, well, that's a nice idea. He kind of does, because they're the ones that put him in office, not the governor. But then that begs another question. Where did the people get that authority? And the answer is, the laws of nature of God tell us, Romans chapter 13, the point blank statement, all authority, all jurisdiction is from God, the only true lawgiver. All authority ultimately comes from the maker of heaven and earth. And there is no authority in the world. And Jesus Christ said this to Pilate, you have no authority over me except God give it to you. You have none. It's quite a statement, because he said he got his authority from Caesar. And Caesar said he got his authority from himself. That's fact. And there are many men that say that yet today. And it is of great curiosity in our own country that we stop and say, well, we get our authority from the people. That's just the direct authority. Recognize, we must recognize, if we're going to have any sensibility about government, that there is no authority in this world unless it comes from God. If that's not true, Jesus Christ is a liar. He is the one that said that. And it's been said many other ways in the writs of God, but Romans 13, chapter 1, says that if authority is true authority, and there is no such thing as false authority, either you have authority or you don't. You either have right or you don't. You're faking it, you're lying if you don't have it. Well, then it comes from the only source, the only fountain, the only spring of authority. So the sheriff's office, if he has authority, comes from God. And here's the nexus between the laws of nature. Remember the phrase, according to Blackstone, according to John Locke, according to the Scottish Enlightenment, according to people in Britain at that time, the legal community, according to just a story. The laws of nature, this phrase from our declaration, the laws of nature is the first volume of God's revelation of his will to man, unwritten in the nature of things. We call that today our common law. That's one name we use for it. In the days of Magna Carta, they called it due process. In the Bible, it's called the way. It's called the path. It's called the way pointed out. That's what Torah means. Torah means the way, the road, R-O-A-D. Pointed out the trod path. It is a course of our common law, as we say. Well, that's unwritten. And the second volume of God's revelation of his will to man is that volume that is written in particular, says William Blackstone in the first volume of his commentaries, written in particular. And that's the Bible. Well, in that, between those two volumes, and by the way, the particular revelation written is the final authority in cases of question. The first volume, our common law, is not a list of laws. It is men's observation by the nature of things of what is right and what is wrong. In our common law tradition, courts call those opinions. We believe this is what is right and this is what is wrong, and they call them opinions and we call them opinions because that's what they are. Because in our common law tradition, fundamentally, we don't manufacture law. We find it. We look for it. The legislature is supposed to look for what's right before he legislates. And the executive is supposed to consider what he believes to be right before he executes the law, the presidents, the governors, and the sheriff. Now, our common law then takes the standards from the revelation of God written, the first principles of those standards. What are the first principles? Those are the overarching standards that govern everything. For example, every bit of God's revelation of his will to man in the Bible, every bit of it, can fall and does fall under one of two headings. Either it falls under the heading of loving the lawgiver, or it falls under the heading of loving your neighbor. Your neighbor, that includes your wife and your husband, by the way, as Luther used to say, your wife's your nearest neighbor, so she ought to be your greatest love. Well, that makes sense. But what does it mean to love her? It means to do what God tells you to do in his law toward her, even when you don't want to. That's what it means. And if you don't have the power to do that, then you're not God's man. And it takes God's power to do those kinds of things, by the way. And things get hard at some point, always. It goes both ways. And it goes that way with your neighbor down the road, too, by the way. But in all events, God commands his people to do what he tells them to do toward the other fella, whether you want to or not, whether you really like to or not. That's called the love of God, by the way. Well, all of that, all of those first principles, there are, under those two headings, there are five under each heading. And all 10 of those, all of God's revelation of his will to man written in the Bible, falls under one of those 10 headings and probably under one or two or three of them by overlap. And you say, all the Bible? Yes, all of the Bible, every bit of it, goes to that in some way. Even the coming of the Messiah himself to pay for the law-breaking, the sin of his people, that was done so that it would empower men to do those things. But then when you look at the particular revelation of his will, the Bible, then everything falls under those categories. We were talking the other day, and Gerard and I were on the telephone, and John was there, and we were talking about these the government taking people's houses in foreclosure. And I made mention of the idea that Jesus Christ addressed that directly, precisely. He said to the Babylonian Judaics of his day, the worshipers of Babylonian Judaism, he said, you fellows eat up, eat, E-A-T, you eat up, you devour the houses of widows. Well, they were using the legal system, the machinery of it, to steal, made it look lawful. That's what a lot of this foreclosure is, and they're doing it, by the way, to widows. And Gerard said, well, that fits pretty well with exactly what's happening today. And I thought it did, but when he said that to me, it drove it home in a way I brought another realization to the fact, I suppose, what I'm saying. The realization, yeah, the Bible is not yesterday's news, it's up to date and fresh as the morning newspaper right now. And Jesus Christ, who, by the way, is the living law, he never broke the law in thought or deed. He is the proclaimer of the law. He is the lawgiver reduced to the span of a man, and he said that that's what's going on in his day. Well, that's what's going on today. And that law, and he is the lawgiver, and he is the final commentator, by the way, on his law. He never changed his law. He said, I came to establish it, not get rid of it. He came here, and he gave his life to establish his will. What is the will of God? That's the will of the sovereign. By the way, there is no sovereign man. There's only a sovereign God. I know people are good-meaning when they say that, but it's not true, and it had not to be said. And besides that, if you talk about being a sovereign man, be advised, I don't follow this intentionally, but I have people call me and that get accused of being sovereign men, and then they prosecute them, try to send them to jail. The bureaucrat agencies of government are hot on that phrase right now, and that's the number one public enemy, number one, just as Bonnie and Clyde used to be, and now it's the sovereign man. And I don't say that in jest. I don't say it in passing, and I say it in the strongest of terms. That's what they think. That's what they're taught. And these minions, these myrmidons, are foolish enough to believe such things. And there you go. Of course, homeschoolers are grouped in with that, too, and Bible believers, I might add. You believe the Bible's true? Or you're weird. There's something wrong with you. You're an absolutist. You're a fundamentalist. Fundamentalist? We're talking about fundamentals here, friends, neighbors, and kin, and the Ten Commandments are God's fundus. That's Latin for fundamental, the foundation. Yes, that just means foundation. They are the foundation of his will. And those first principles that he gives in those Ten Commandments, he's the Bible, the writers bespeak them constantly throughout the older New Testaments. They make mention of them, they expound on them, they illustrate them. Well, the book of Deuteronomy illustrates them in detail, in order, by the way. But each one of those is a principle, a fundamental first principle. And our common law, here's what I'm driving at. You got the laws of nature, unwritten in the nature of things. That's our common law. That's due process. And the laws of nature of God, written particular and expressed in the Bible. How do you get those fundamental first principles from the law written, and you put legs on them, and make them work for men? Oh, how many people go to church and don't know diddly nothing about the law of God, don't care to, they went to church Easter. Did you go to church Easter? Most people in America went to church and they heard pious platitudes about the loving Savior. Well, he is a loving Savior, but what is love? It is that you keep his commandments. And by the way, when he comes again, he will annihilate anybody who looks at him askance. How do I know? Because the laws of nature's God warned me particularly. And when he came the first time, he came as a suffering servant to establish in our eyes, in the eyes of men, his utter authority as God's mighty warrior who will destroy anyone terminally who thinks of thinking, even thinking a thought against the true lawgiver. That's who he is. And if you went to church Sunday, probably, hope you didn't. I'm sure there are exceptions. I went to church Sunday. I heard pious platitudes of foolishness about nothing. presenting a Jesus Christ who is not God, who is not who he says he is, who is not Lord of the universe, who is not the final judge, and the executioner, by the way. All of those things. He's all of it. He's the beginning. He's the end. Well, that's what the laws of nature's God written says. But how do you get the will of the sovereign, which is the true law, over to make it work? And the nexus that God has given to men to do that is his processes. That's what our common law is. It is the way, W-A-Y, the how, not what, but how we go about putting legs, breathing life into the dry bones of this thing we call justice. What is justice, by the way? That's a Latin word. It means what is right. What is right? Yeah. Well, who has true jurisdiction? Because whoever has true jurisdiction has discernment to make the decision. And that ends the matter if the process that God gives us is followed. God gives us the processes. I'm involved in the situation now. It's a family situation. Now, there are conflicts in families, in case you hadn't noticed. I'm sure you haven't experienced any. It was a conflict situation between family members. And they came to me and talking about who's right and who's wrong. And I said, well, let's think about this. What's the process? The process that Jesus Christ himself has given us to resolve such matters. And he's given us a process. And it's in Matthew chapter 18. And he says there, if you follow this process, I will ratify in heaven what you decide. But you got to follow the process. If you don't follow the process, I'm not ratifying anything. Whatsoever is bound in earth shall be bound in heaven, he says. And the process is not a fact-finding mission. It's not a court where you decide who's right and wrong. Not in this instance, no. It's just whether or not you're willing to listen to each other when you have concerns. Are you willing to shut your mouth and listen? If you aren't willing to shut your mouth and listen, Jesus Christ tells us in that particular instance, I'm illustrating the processes. Then he says, you're to not have anything to do with the fellow that won't listen. I'm not asking him to say anything. He just needs to listen to his brother. Well, it is the processes that are important. Now, when it comes to the sheriff, it's not who sheriff that we should be concerned with. What we should be concerned with is how we get him there. Our common law is not a result-oriented tradition. Why? Because God's kingdom, his government, in the Bible, is not result-oriented. It is process-oriented. That's just an example. It's probably the most pronounced example that I know of, and it's in the gospel records. It's about process. It's not about achieving a certain result. He doesn't tell you what result to achieve. He just says, here's the process to follow, and whatever happens after that is good. I will bind it myself. You bring it to me and I'll certify it. I'll put my stamp of approval on it and that ends the matter. And you have the confidence of knowing that you have followed the law. And we call it our common law. It is due process in our Constitution. The law of the land is the phrase in Magna Carta and our Constitution. That means due process. This is the supreme law of the land, our Constitution says. That's our common law. That's the laws of nature, unwritten in the nature of things. How do we get the sheriff in office? We're trying to discover from the Bible. This is the thing I'm thinking it through. It's a great question. That's the kind of questions we need. Let's think about this. Let's draw these connections between the laws of nature's God written, but in particular, the first principles that are written there. How do we put legs on those and breathe life into those dry bones, otherwise dry and useless bones? And the way to do that, our common law, God has given that to us. He has said to us, I'll give you another example. Think about the sheriff as I talk about this. Before habeas corpus, before the Habeas Corpus Act, a parliament said, we've got to make this, we've got to come back to the law of God. What's the law of God? Be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth. Everything in the Bible after that is in support of those two things. Be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth. Take lordship according to my law, according to my commandments, over the land. And we've lost sight of that. I used to listen to the fat lady sing. What was her name? Fat lady. Smith, Mrs. Smith, she used to sing God Bless America. Land that I love, stand beside her, guide her through the night with the light from above. or the mountains and the prairies and the oceans, white with foam. God bless America, my home sweet home. But it was all about the whole thing, the whole song, the poem that was written about the land. It's all about the land. The land is controlled by the light from above. The will of God from heaven, from the skies, to the land, and then we call it the law of the land for that reason. And then to us, and it is a process-oriented tradition. Habeas corpus. Habeas corpus is a process. It's not a result. No, habeas corpus protects our liberties because it's consonant with this first principle of God's law written in the Bible. Everything is how. It stresses how more than what. God said, for example, somebody said to me the other day, well, the sacrifices of the Old Testament, are they ever going to be mandatory again? I said, well, no, they won't be mandatory again. That's impossible because they were never mandatory in the first place. You go back and read. There's nothing mandatory there. In every case, you read it closely, you see that it's voluntary. But what God said is this, and this is an example of the principle. I'm not talking about having sacrifices. I'm talking about process. God said, if, he says this often, but it's always a part of the voluntariness of it, if you decide to do this, if you decide that you're going to make a sacrifice, whether a burnt sacrifice or an animal sacrifice or a grain sacrifice or a ground meal sacrifice, anything of worth you decide to sacrifice, or like David, when he poured out the water from his hometown's well that he was used to as a kid, and three of his men or two of them, a few of them, risked their lives to get it back to him while they were in battle because the enemy controlled the town of Bethlehem. They broke through the lines and they drew water from the well. He said he longed for a drink from that well at Bethlehem. And he took it. When he got it, he said, I can't believe you fellas did this. You risked your lives for just to make my comfort, to fill my wishes. And he poured it out on the ground in a sacrifice to God. Well, if you decide to make that kind of a commitment, God says, you'd better do it the way I tell you to do it. And we get to the New Testament when we have what we call the Lord's Supper. That's not a sacrifice. That's a ceremony to remind us of something. And he says in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, because you're not doing it the way God tells you to do it, some of you are sick and some of you are dead. With God, it's about how we deal with it that's important. For example, how do you come to God? Well, there's a way, W-A-Y. And what is that way? Only through the Messiah himself, the Son, Jesus Christ. There is no other way. And if you try to come up some other way, said Jesus Christ, you are a thief and a robber. Well, again, it stresses the way. Let's talk about the sheriff. Our common law is a matter of process. Habeas corpus, I want to finish that. Habeas corpus is a process. And you go about doing it. It's not result-oriented. It's up to the court to decide, is this man lawfully jailed? He can file a motion or somebody can do it on his behalf to bring his body before the court, and the jailing power, whether it be a hospital, whether it be a state government, whether it be a county government, a national government, no matter who it is, it can be a private party or a public party. You got to prove to the court that you're lawfully confining this person to a boundary. And if you can't prove to the court that you're doing that, the court, the Habeas Corpus Act says, you got to let him go on the spot. No, you don't send him back to the jail to be processed out. Well, before that act was passed, there was another process they had put in place to try to do that. Remember, the whole idea behind it is in support of the laws of God written to be fruitful, multiply, and scatter over the land. You can't scatter over the land. You can't get up and go if you're jailed. And God's real serious about men being able to get up and go on impulse. And this whole thing about telling people they can't travel and the right to travel is God takes that real serious. Why? Because it's his land and he wants it taken care of. And men can't take care of it unless they're free on his impulse to go and take lordship over land, to move into new territory, to buy land, to build a house, to improve land. That's what he likes. Well, habeas corpus is the men looking and saying, how can we do this? Because before habeas corpus, what they didn't have a process. What they do is they'd send the judges around every 3 months to every jail in England. And they go to every 3 months to every jail, and they would interview. They really did this. This is part of our common law tradition. They interviewed the prisoners. They look at the records. They ask the people that were jailing them, well, why you got this man in here? And they'd tell them, and they'd say, oh, okay, that sounds good. But they found that there was too much hidden with that, and it wasn't working. And after a few centuries, so they went to the Habeas Corpus Act. Our common law is when God has given government the power, the jurisdiction of government to men, which he has, and he said, there's certain things I want. I want you to fulfill the first principles of my will written, called the Bible. I want you to find those first principles. For example, the first principle, be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth. That's first principle to God's creature. And habeas corpus, they saw it wasn't working, so they went another direction. They tried something else. Hey, our common law is me and you looking at the nature of things and saying, hey, how can we put machinery in place, or how can we put a process in place that allows folk to have their concerns heard and the true law be done respecting them or somebody else? Well, we looked at this situation when we got to America with the sheriff, and we noticed that in the year 1066, when William the Conqueror invaded England, he took the power of the local shire, which is their old word for county, he took the power of the shire away from the people to choose their sheriffs. Because in old Anglo-Saxon and Anglo-Dane England and Celtic England, all those folk were mixed up there, they chose their own local sheriffs. After 1066, the shires were named counties, to use the French word, and a count was in charge of a county, and the king appointed the sheriff. Whereas the sheriff was the agent of the folk of the county, the folk, and that's what they called them in the old German speech, they call them the Volk. Maybe some of you remember the Volkswagen. Volkswagen. In German, that means the people's wagon, which the wagon, they just took the word wagon and they apply it to a motorized vehicle. And they call their cars wagons. And the Volkswagen was the folk for the people's wagon. And the folk of the shire, that's what they call them in Anglo-Saxon England, the folk chose their own sheriff. Well, when the Normans came, they said the king's going to choose the sheriff for each county. Why? Well, because the king wanted his man there to keep him informed what was going on there. I just talked to a fellow from Britain. I'm on the radio in Britain, and the fellow over there that is nice enough to keep everything organized, and he tells me about how I can make myself sound clearer on the radio and all those kind of things. He was telling me they were having a sheriff. They were having a meeting in Nottingham, and it was about birth certificates. And I said, why are you having it in Nottingham? Because I remembered the sheriff of Nottingham. He was the sheriff of Robin Hood fame and Robin of Locksley. And he said, well, I think that's why they want to have the meeting in Nottingham. They're making a statement because what happened in Nottingham. But the sheriff of Nottingham that was the antagonist of Robin Hood was appointed by the king, you see. And Robin Hood was not a Norman. He was, we don't know for sure, he was a Saxon or a Dane or an Anglo or all three or a Celt. And he was of those other tribes that were there. And they wanted to reestablish Anglo-Saxon government in England where the sheriff was chosen by the people and not from a central location. Well, the sheriffs in England stayed chosen by the crown of England. The crown also appointed appointed a lot of things after the Normans got there. The common law, in essence, stayed in place. The jury stayed in place, but there were adjustments that were not good, that were the imprint of Rome, because the Normans came from from France, which was under the Roman Code of Justinian and the canon law of the Church of Rome, which is the same thing with a different application. Well, when the folks came to America, they said, you know what we're going to do? And this was the whole point of America from the jump. We come here, and the New England Puritans, they came here. They were a political party that had gotten control of Congress, of Parliament, through a terrible civil war But then Parliament became oppressive because Parliament became sovereign. And they said, we're sick of this. No branch of government is sovereign over another. We're going to come to America and do it right. Well, we did it right, but then the British, after 170 years or so, 150, 160 years, they said, we're not going to let you do that anymore. You're going to do it the way we do it, but beyond that, you're not even going to have the rights we have. The common law doesn't even apply there in the colonies. So we're going to let you have slavery since the common law doesn't apply. That's why we have slavery in the colonies. That was a confusion to everybody here, and it caused a lot of trouble, obviously. But we said we're going to have sheriffs the way the Anglo-Saxons used to have sheriffs. We're going to choose them ourselves locally. We're not going to have the governor of the colony, and then became states. We're not going to have the governors of the states appoint the sheriffs in each county like they do over in England, where the king appoints the sheriffs in each county. No. We're going to elect our sheriffs or choose them by some method ourselves in our own counties. And that's what we do in America, just like the Anglo-Saxons used to do before the year 1066. And some of you have heard it said, it bears repeating here, the Anglo-Saxons called the agent of the people the agent of the bulk. They called him the shire agent. And their old Germanic word for agent was reeve, R-E-E-V-E. So they called him the shire reeve. And through the centuries, people, of course, began to slur the words, and they drew it together, and they got to saying, Shire Reeve, and after a few more centuries, they got the V out of it, and they got the hard Germanic V out of it, and they put Fs in it, and they started getting lazy in their speech, and they just called him the sheriff, and we call him the sheriff today. He is the agent. The word means the shire, which is the Anglo-Saxon word for county, that the Normans changed when they got there because they spoke French, having been on the coast of France for about 165 years. They were from Norway, and they had conquered the coast of France. And they picked up the French tongue. They picked up some of the Roman law. Matter of fact, William the Conqueror came to England to establish the law of the canon law of the Church of Rome. That's what the Pope they gave him leave to do that. Of course, when he got there, he kept telling the Pope the check's in the mail, and he never did send it, and he did what he wanted. When you have an army and you think you can get away with it, that's what men used to do. Good thing he did. The common law stayed in place for our sake, and we're able to reestablish. But is there biblical precedent for the sheriff? And I say yes. Why? Because our common law is the nexus. We know what the principles are. What are the principles of God's law? And there's more here than I can talk about. If you've got my book, I forget where I've got this. I think I've cataloged about 30, at least, and expounded each one of them a little bit, 30 clear corresponding characteristics of our common law, our law of the land, with the law of God written in the Bible. As a matter of overarching principle, about 30-something, like maybe 27, I forget, I'll have to go back and look. I'm sure you can find it if you look there. Just look in the index and the titles to each of the sections in the front of the book, and you'll find it there. I think it's called, I've got my book just out of reach here, and I've got my computer in my lap, and I don't want to reach to get it, but I think the section is called Common Law and the Bible Similarities. I think that's what it's called, something like that. You can see them there. So, yes, the sheriff is, number one, local control of government. You can see that in the Bible from the days of Moses clear through to the end, from even into the government that God set up for his people in the New Testament, people call it the church, the congregation of God. He's very persnickety about his government. If you're interested in how he lays it out even in further detail, building upon the foundation of the Old Testament first principles, you can go to the pastoral epistles, and I've got a long explanation of the idea there, as I understand it, of rule by eldership. That's what our Congress is. That's what Parliament is. Under the Anglo-Saxon government, it was ruled by the Witenagemot. And under the, and some of the islands, Iceland today, yet still, they were settled by the Danes. They still have what they call the Thang. And all the countries of common law sensibilities have what is called the, or the ruler rule by eldership, and that also included the rule in individual instances by 12-man jury. And the sheriff was the administrator that impaneled the jury, that swore them in Old England, in Old Anglo-England. He swore them in, and sometimes they would impanel a jury. This is amazing. They would impanel a jury to oversee the impaneling of the jury because they didn't trust maybe the sheriff. And so those are the things that I find, and there are more similarities between our common law government. Now, if the sheriff ever gets so it doesn't work, it's up to us to observe the way things are and the nature of things and say, what's not working here? And to make adjustments. That's what our common law is about. Our common law is about finding ways, W-A-Y-S, processes, procedures to put in place that are consonant with the law of God written. We come back and check. We say, all right, maybe this will work. Hey, check it out with the particular law. Does it violate any first principle of the law of God written? Well, you've got to know the law of God written a little bit. I would encourage you, read a little bit of it every day. You will be, if you just sit down, relax. I don't advocate anybody smoke any cigarettes. That'll kill you. But if that's what you, if you're a smoker and you're going to smoke a cigarette anyway, do whatever you have to do to relax. Get a cup of coffee. You say, I want a can of beer. Well, I don't advocate being an alcoholic, but if you drink beer, I suppose that's being an alcoholic. Do what? Sit down in the easy chair. Relax and read the Bible. Read one chapter. Pick out a chapter you think might be interested and just read it. That's God talking. That's his words recorded, poured through the personalities of individual men while preserving the points he wants to get across. And I have ample evidence to believe that's exactly what happened. Men were not Robitons when they wrote it. No, no, no. God poured his truth through their personalities. And when you read the Bible, you clearly see the personalities of the writers. You read John, you're not reading Peter. That is like a life, night and day to the 2 men. Paul, he's a whole different animal. Overeducated almost, as that one fellow said in Acts. Had the equivalent of 2 or 3 doctor's degrees. Peter, the fisherman, said, I can't understand what Paul says. Well, other people said that too, and people are still saying it today. Doesn't mean that he said that something was untrue. It just means that his personality comes through, and the things that God had given him in communication come through. Some people are drawn to him more than others. Other people are drawn to other writers like Jeremiah. Isaiah was an educated man in the Old Testament. Amos was not, the prophet Amos. Isaiah was comparable to Paul in the Newer Testament. And you see it in the vocabulary. His vocabulary is much more than John. John's vocabulary was hardly anything. But he sure knew how to use the words and the tenses. So there is the sheriff. Yeah, I believe that those are the common law is the nexus. It's our responsibility, our jurisdiction, to use our individual discernment and say, how does this apply right here, right now? I feel like I've spoken too long, John. But I've already used up all the time for tonight, probably, but that's all right. If anybody got anything out of it. Good question. Yeah.
Well, you probably answered 3 questions with that, so I don't know what the next question was, but it's okay.
Oh, good.
It was good. I enjoyed it. Jan, you got anything else, Jan?
Yes. Don't go away, Brent. I have several more.
Yeah, we're going to get you on the hook.
Okay.
You're on the hook.
Okay.
The next one is, if the sheriff is informed that the magistrate, the prosecutor, and a stacked grand jury are all against him, and he decides to impanel his own grand and petit juries, may he use some jurors from the grand jury to help fill the empty petit jury slots?
Wow, boy, that's a complex question. Now, there's a circumstance I'd never heard about before, never thought of, and that's the wonderful thing about our common law. Because when something comes up that's never been seen before, every case, as they used to say, every tub must set on its own bottom, and every skin must hang by its own tail, and every case must stand on its own merits, on its own legs. And so the facts change, are constantly new. New situations bob forth from the flux of human experience. And it's up to us to take the same old principles that never change and apply them to new circumstances. Well, you're asking, can the sheriff impanel the jury? The sheriff is just like you and me, just like the judge. He's just like every individual juror. He's like every American. You know, he's like every member of Adam's race. God says to every one of us, you make up your own mind what's right and wrong. And as Davy Crockett used to say, once you've made up your mind, once you know you're right, go ahead. But make sure, this is what Congressman Crockett used to stress, make sure you're right. And once you're convinced, you better move ahead. And every man must do that. That's the strength of our country. And that's why other countries are not, have not been, I should say, as productive and powerful. Because in other countries, the mindset is wait till somebody tells you what to do. Wait till the law commands you. That's not our country. Our country is I decide what's right. I make up my mind. And if I'm convicted, I go with it. The government tells me that I'm supposed to do this or I'm supposed to do that, and I believe it's utterly contrary. If you're obedience to government, by that very obedience, you are flying in the face of God. Well, that's the time that you have to defy government. You don't defy government with other things they tell you to do that are senseless. Well, it's senseless, but can you do it and not fly in the face of God? Yeah, I can do it. Can you obey the speed limit and not fly in the face of God? Well, you might say, yeah, I can do that. Can you stop at a stop sign without flying in the face of God? Yeah, I can do that. Can you do some useless thing that you know is useless, that the government knows is useless? Can you do it without flying in the face of God? Yes, I can do that. But if government commands you to do something that by that very act of obedience to government, you fly in God's face, that's a different matter. And that's kind of what, that's what the Bible teaches. And I would cite Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the three Hebrew boys that were commanded to bow down to the golden image, the idol set up, the idol alone, the seeable thing that represented God, their God. And they wouldn't do it. They said to bow down to this is to, by the very act of bowing down to this statue, this dumb idol, we violate the clear commandment of our Maker to not bow down to any idols. I mean, he even goes so far as to say, you don't even make such thing. Thou shalt make unto me no image that's graven. If you're not to make an image of the true God graven, that's what it says, how much more so you're not to make an image of a false God like this fella had. Any image, any picture, even of Jesus Christ, is idol worship. That's what the Bible teaches clearly, because there's only one similitude, one image of God that God authorizes, and that's the living man, Jesus Christ himself, and any other idol is. And that's what these Hebrew boys said, and so they wouldn't do it. Well, that made Nebuchadnezzar pretty angry. The Bible says he screwed his face up. He got really steamed. He got so mad he told the men that fired the furnace, he said, make it seven times hotter than it's ever been. I'm going to have you fellows either bow down or I'm going to have these soldiers throw you in the furnace. Well, they said the furnace was so hot that the soldiers that threw them in perished. They killed them. Well, God preserved them. You can go back and read that in the book of Daniel. But the point there is that it was contrary to the will of God clearly. And by the way, it must be clearly contrary. Two requirements to disobey government. Number one, clearly obedience. Well, I shouldn't put them together. Obedience to government, by the very act of obedience to government, you are flying in the face of God. That's number one. But number two, that you are flying in the face of God by obeying government must be utterly unambiguous in the Bible, utterly clear in the particular and written revelation of God. Now, if you can do that, then you've got a case for disobedience to government. But I find that people jump the gun quite a bit on that, and they want to do all sorts of crazy things, and Jesus Christ tells us not to do that. Matter of fact, he says, and he's using the example in his own day, he said, look, if the Roman soldiers are marching through your town, and that was a foreign invasion force, by the way, to them, and one of them asked you to carry his load for a mile, he said, go ahead and do it. Not only that, he said, carry it 2 miles if you feel up to it. Because the Roman law said that if a Roman soldier asks you to carry something, you have to do it. You got to do it. And of course, they chafed at that because they were an occupying army. But Jesus Christ said no. But there were things he said no, that you don't go, fly in God's face when government tells you to do something. But you don't be belligerent about it. Even Daniel himself, in the book of Daniel, he was ordered to do things, eat things that God told him not to eat. And he went to the emperor, he communicated to the emperor by going through the head of the eunuchs. And he said, listen, just let me try this. Let me try that. Let's work this thing out. I've got an idea that I think will get you what you want. And so he tried to deal with him, and he didn't just tell him off and give him a good cussing and tell him to kiss his can and pack sand and where the sun don't shine and all those kind of things we hear said. No, you don't do that kind of stuff. The Bible says honor all men at all times. That doesn't mean you have to obey them if they're commanding you to do something that is utterly evil, as we're pointing out. Well, that's another matter. But can the sheriff impanel a jury? Well, I think, as I said, he's responsible, just like each one of us, to do right no matter what the circumstances are. He's bound to do right, whatever right is. And he has jurisdiction. He has jurisdiction to say, no, I'm not going to do this just because somebody told him to. Or, yes, here's what I've decided to do. I swore an oath to make sure that what is done in this case is done right, and I'm going to do it no matter what happens to me. You know, once you swear an oath, at that point, you've crossed the Rubicon. Be careful what you swear. You swear an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against enemies, foreign and domestic. Foreign enemies, that means to be served as a member of the militia. Domestic, that means to serve on the jury. You swore an oath to do that. Well, the sheriff swore such an oath, and the Bible says, in the law of the revelation of God particular and written, that whatever you swear to, he said, be careful what you swear to in the Older Testament and Newer Testament, because God will require it of you. He will. How many of us inadvertently have sworn without really thinking about what we're saying? Get on the witness stand, join the Army, join the Marine Corps, join the Navy, join the Air Force. There's one. Young boys, most of them don't have a clue what they're doing. How do I know? Well, I've been there. That's how I know. And thinking back on my youth, I wish others had taken time. I shouldn't say that. Maybe they did take time to explain it to me, and it just didn't take, and I wasn't paying attention. I found that to be true, by the way, from my impetuous youth. I wasn't focused enough. But be careful. Now that you're older, I'm telling folks that are listening, God says be careful. He will require your oath of you, what you swear to. And the sheriff has made a swearing of an oath. And when it comes down to, can you draw a grand juror from the a trial juror from the formerly impaneled grand jury? Well, that would depend upon a lot of things, I would think. I would depend upon bias. That would depend upon cross-examine, have an opportunity to cross-examine them before you do it, have an opportunity maybe just to understand who they are. There are a lot of factors that come into this. You know, to impanel a grand jury, it doesn't take much, not much qualifications. And by the way, the rules of evidence don't apply in front of the grand jury. They can hear anything they want. They can say anything they want. They can ask any questions they want. Evidence doesn't have to be admissible at trial for them to look at it. They don't have to give the reasons for why they do what they do. That's a problem for some people, but it also is an incredible power that grand jurors don't have a clue they have. Now, we're talking here. We started this class on Saturday mornings on common law evidence. And as it's developing in my mind more as I'm going, I'm saying, you know, the important thing with evidence is not that I try to teach men and women or boys and girls to be lawyers. Do we need more people to think like lawyers? No, we don't. So why would I want to teach them the law of evidence from the perspective of understanding what a lawyer would understand? No. People, all of us, lawyers included, need to look at evidence in a way that's effective, the way God says we're supposed to look at it, in the laws of nature, and the laws of nature is God. And how does that apply? It applies to the jury. That's how it applies. We need to teach evidence to Americans because that's the power of the American, is the jury, the grand jury, and the petit jury. That, wow. Listen, the word God in the Old Testament, Elohim, means final arbiter of right and wrong in individual instances. The final arbiter of right and wrong in individual instances. Well, isn't that what a juror is? Isn't he the final arbiter of right and wrong in individual instances? Isn't the juror the one after the jury together has a unanimous verdict, and that verdict, as a matter of fact, our Constitution, following our common law, says no one can overturn it, unless, of course, the rules, the due process wasn't followed. But it's the jury, among men, as far as men go, is the final arbiter of right and wrong. And the Bible calls such men, in the Old Testament, calls them Elohim. We translate that God, with a small g, a small g. The true, the ultimate final arbiter of right and wrong is the true God. He is Elohim, the maker. It says in Genesis chapter 1:1, in the beginning Elohim created, namely the heavens and namely the land, the skies and the land. The power, Elohim bespeaks final, ultimate, unassailable power. What is the final, ultimate, and unassailable power in the universe? No, it's not the power to make heaven and earth. That's real power, no question. But even the greater power is to decide right and wrong in individual instances. There is no greater power. You know, Jesus Christ said that after he healed people, he said, which is greater? Healed this one fellow. He said to the Judaics, the Jews, the leaders, the Pharisees, the Babylonian Judaism crowd, he said, which is greater? Is it a greater power that I say to this man, stand up and walk, the lame man? Or is it a greater power that I said, you say, your sins are forgiven? Well, they knew the answer to that question. He says, I say to him, stand up and walk, to show you that I have the greater power. That's evidence that I'm the one that has the greatest power over right and wrong and to forgive sins. He's the only one that has that power, by the way, and he does it on the basis of his death and paying the penalty for those sins. Incredible story. Well, it comes back to law again. So can the sheriff do that? Yeah, the sheriff has authority to do that. Matter of fact, the sheriff has the jurisdiction to do that. That means jurisdiction, the right to act, respecting a given matter. And every man has the jurisdiction to ensure right is done. Well, that'd be my answer, but I'd never considered the question. Again, that's, man, I'm amazed. I'm amazed at people, the way people are thinking. And it encourages me to see people come at stuff fresh and ask questions I'd never thought of before, and I doubt if anybody else had either, and say, what do we do? Because that means people are thinking through this problem. Who is the jury? Who's the grand jury compared to the petit jury? Go ahead, Gerard, if you're still there.
Yeah, I'm okay, still here.
Okay.
Go ahead, Jay. I have a little bit more for you, Brent.
Okay.
This pertains to your book, Clause by Clause. We have a fellow member that wants to buy 15 to 20 at a time, or possibly a case if you have cases, and how many are in a case, and then how long before delivery after order, and where does he send the money for them?
Oh, wow. Well, things have changed since I had those books printed. When I had them I had a lot of them printed, and that was back when we had to print them in batches of a lot to make them affordable. And since that, the technology has changed, and we don't have to do that anymore. We can have them printed one at a time as people order them, but at the same time, if he wants a box, I've got boxes. I think, if I remember right, there are 80 or 90 to a box. Mm-hmm. And here's what I would ask him to do. I would ask him, or anybody else that wants to buy them too, email me, the email will get to me. Go to www.commonlawyer.com, commonlawyer.com, and go to the contact page and email there and say, here's my phone number. Please call me. I want to talked to you about buying a lot of your books, and I don't know who it is, and because I don't have the name now. If you'll do that, that would help me, and we can talk sure. about how what you're after and what we can do.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, you can go to the website, and you can buy those books with a, if you have a card, a debit card or something, you can buy them with buttons there. There's buttons you can tick and purchase those books, and those orders will go through. And there's a guy in New England that handles, physically handles the taking care of mailing that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey, Brent, what is that? What is that book, Clause by Clause? What's in it?
Just that's the. I think he's talking about the book. It's called Declaration of 76 in the United States Constitution, Clause by Clause, a Common Lawyer Comments. It's just a. It's a blow by blow comment on each clause in order of those two documents. It's about 200 pages long, but it's made in such a way it fits in your shirt pocket. And I try to hit every clause. I found there are a lot of booklets out there, nice little booklets you can put in your pocket or purse, that were reprints or just printings of the Declaration of 76 in the Constitution. That's all nice. I like that. That's good. But I said I didn't find a pocket booklet that gave a brief explanation to each clause to try to make it simple. I don't try to put lawyerese in it, just talk about it a little bit. And that's what that book is, Clause by Clause. But it has a longer title.
Okay, thank you.
All those books are at commonlawyer.com. All the books are on the books page, and you can see them there, and which ones, what they cost, and all that. Plus, I think most of them, too, are at amazon.com. I want to say that. I don't want to forget that. I think almost all of them are there, except the good book, A Common Lawyer Translates the Bible from the Original Tongues. I don't think that one's on Amazon yet.
Okay.
And that's the last question that I have for anyone tonight.
Okay. So then we'll switch over. Let me get my screen up because I'm on another screen here. Just bear with me a second. To the queue. And in the queue, I'm going to open it up. We have Jim from New York. Go ahead, Jim.
Oh, I'm still in the queue, huh?
You're still there.
Yeah. How's everything going?
Oh, it's going.
Quite an exciting time today up there in Albany.
Yeah, I bet. What'd you do? You filed the case today, right?
Yeah, it went nice and easy. I went to go to the sheriff's, but I didn't have the proofs of service on me, so that only went so far. Came home, duty called with other stuff, so I never got back down there. But I'll go back tomorrow morning with it. Yeah, but it went pretty easy.
They didn't give you any trouble, huh?
No, not really. I mean, a couple of procedural things she asked me about, the litigants, the plaintiffs and stuff, their addresses. But you know, we're just going care of Post Road, and that's it. So I wanted to let people know that, you know, that we're still doing the non-judicial foreclosures and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the habeas corpuses, and streamlining that affidavit process. And another thing we're also doing is trying to get you and John onto these radio shows, and I'm going to start myself doing the New York State areas, the radio and television stations and stuff like that, and the Liberty Groups in New York, see if maybe we can do something there and, you know, to get the word out, because this is it. So as good as that, and you know, it's just like filing that writ of mandamus. That was a pretty big thing too, and the Queen of Toronto. So I just want to let people know, Jim and National Liberty Alliance, send me any ideas or any kind of, you know, helpful hints or whatever. Even something that you think is not worth it, believe me, we hash it around here. So right. We want all the ideas from people. And, of course, the best place to bring it up is on this show right here, because then
that's
everybody
right.
hears, people can chime in.
Yeah.
So that's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jim. We appreciate it. And we'll see how it goes. I'm sure we got a lot more coming from here.
Yeah, and I missed you the other day. I wanted to see if, maybe I'll just take a ride down and see you and bring you that.
Yeah. Yeah, give me a call. I was kind of out of touch. I didn't realize my phone wasn't in service.
And yeah, that happened.
I missed your call.
Yeah.
By the time I got back to it again, it was after 6 o'clock. You were long gone, I think.
Oh, yeah. I was already here.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. We're going to the next caller. I don't have a name or a state. It's in the 623 area phone. Just give me your first name and your state. Go ahead. You're unmuted.
Hi. This is Diana. I'm calling. This is my first time on the call. You were on the real TV tonight. I just wanted to know, I got in late on this call tonight. I wanted to know if there's a replay or how you can get the recording.
Yeah, we do record all of them, and if you click on the Monday night call page, where on the top of the, when you get to the welcome page on National Liberty Alliance, it says Monday night call, and you click that tab, it'll tell you how to get on. But when you scroll to the bottom, are all the recordings and dated in order. And this one will go up sometime tonight, shortly after, the show. But
okay,
certainly by tomorrow it'll be up there.
Yeah, I have that website again. I'm having trouble. National what, Alliance?
If you go to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org.
Okay. Yes.
And spell
okay.
it right out, nationallibertyalliance.org. I think
right.
we have .com also, if it doesn't matter what you put in. And then on the welcome page, there's a tab. It says Join Our Monday Night Call. So you click that tab, and it brings you to the Monday night page, okay?
Okay.
And once you're on there, scroll down that page, and the recordings are on the bottom, and they're in chronological order. They're I don't know what they are, MP3s or 4s or something. And you can click on them and listen, or you can download them to your computer, whatever you want to do.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Yeah. Okay, that's it. We go to our next victim here. Hang on. We're going to Terry from New Jersey. Let me unmute you, Terry.
Hi, Gerard.
Hey, how's it going, Terry?
Good. I sent an email to you and John the other day. It's an interesting case here. I don't know if you had an opportunity to read it. To California... Attorney General threatened to arrest Orange County Sheriff for assisting ICE. Orange County, California voted to bypass state rules and work with the federal government and ICE officials. And on Monday, the Orange County Sheriff's Department announced it will publicly post inmates' release dates in order to assist ICE agents. In response to this, California Attorney General Javier Becerra threatened to arrest Orange County Sheriff to arrest the Orange County Sheriff for holding criminal illegal aliens for ICE officers. Now, this is an exchange between the Attorney General and a reporter. Becerra says, state law is state law, and it is my job to enforce state law. I will do so. And we want to make sure that every jurisdiction, including Orange County, understand that state law required of the people and what the state law required of the people and subdivisions of the state of California. The reporter asked, did that mean a lawsuit of the sheriff department or the arrest of the sheriff? Becerra, I think I just answered that. So you got a little showdown shaping up here in Orange County, California.
Yeah, I think the sheriff has more authority than the governor does on that one, but I guess we'll find out, you know.
Right.
As, you know, look, at he's got to uphold the Constitution, the sheriff, right?
What's that?
So I said the sheriff's got to uphold the Constitution.
Right,
basically.
Right, yeah.
So I don't know, you know. All these guys think they're immune, so why wouldn't the sheriff be immune? they all claim their own immunity. But in other words, what's the governor saying? That he doesn't, he has like a sanctuary. He wants the sheriff to not enforce the ICE laws. Is that what it is?
No, it's that the sheriff wants to enforce the ICE law in contradiction of Jerry Brown, who's the governor who appointed this guy. The state said, no, we don't want you to be posting the names of the inmates' release dates so that ICE can come in and arrest them.
Yeah, but what's the law of California? They can't. In other words, that's within his rights as a sheriff, I think. I mean, what does
that's
California,
the conflict, because you got state law and federal law conflicting with each other.
Yeah, but I don't think state law says that the sheriff can't release their names. They're just, that's their interpretation of it. Show me the law that says that the sheriff can't release the names of the release dates. That's baloney. That's actually public knowledge.
You would think so.
Yeah, he's out of, they're out of their minds. They cannot stop him from doing that. You know, I mean, look, you know, how about we release the names of these guys, and then what are they going to do? I'll go there and I'll ask them, you got any illegal aliens in there? Oh, yeah, okay, I want their names and their release dates. And so then I'll publish them myself. And the sheriff don't have to do it. How's that?
I think it's an interesting power play here, because basically what you have is you have the executive power trying to lord it over the elected power and trying to control them, which has always been the way it is. Even with the committeemen process, it's always a top-down domination.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing is the sheriff is part of the executive branch, and so is the governor. So you got somewhat of a match, a peon match here between the executive and the executive, right? But the sheriff is the constitutional, you know, officer,
right?
And basically the arbiter of the law. I don't know. Well, the governor's got a lot of power too. He's like the president, and who is the executive, right? A governor of a state is like the president of the state, right?
Right.
So I don't know. That's very interesting. And what are we going to do? We're going to take it to a Supreme Court. Take it to a corrupt Supreme Court.
Yeah, another constitutional crisis.
Exactly, it absolutely is, right? But I don't see that. Look at either. Here's the. Let's keep it simple. Are they outside the law? Are they aliens? Are they illegal aliens? Are they undocumented aliens? Well, that's the law, right? So what do they say? California has open borders. There's nobody illegal. Anybody can come to California anytime. There's no control at all?
Apparently.
Well, you see, that's unsafe. And that's like what Donald Trump did. When he put the ban on and the Supreme Court tried to tell him that he couldn't do that, they had no authority. In other words, as the executive officer, Donald Trump, and the commander-in-chief and that, but in the, his job is to do what he thinks to protect the state. And I think the sheriff is the same way. Look, you're telling me that we got somebody that comes in. We have laws in this country. You have to be naturalized or not. Now, I would think that the law that California made that anybody can come in, I would say that that's unconstitutional, because I think that that's a danger to the people of the state, because that's how we're getting enemies, foreign and domestic. They're foreign when they're coming in, and then they settle down here and they become enemies domestic, because they're bound and determined to vote any any of us out of office and to subvert the Constitution, right?
You know what gets me about this is that anytime they release you from jail, before they release you, they see if there's any detainers on you. Apparently, that's what this basically is. And the state of California doesn't want the federal government to be informed about these people, even though, in effect, they have a detainer on them because they're illegal immigrants or they're here illegally.
Right. So the state of California and the governor are breaking the law.
Right.
They're telling the sheriff to ignore the law and to break the law. That's what they're telling
him. And then threaten to arrest him. I mean,
I'd like to see that happen. I don't think they could do it.
Well, you should read this article and read the comments, because a lot of people have commented on this story, and some of them are very insightful.
Mm-hmm. What do they want to do? Start a war between the sheriff and the governor? So, what's the governor going to do? Call the state police out, and the sheriff's going to call his SWAT team out. Next thing you know, the sheriff's going to go out and he's going to be deputizing people in the community. I mean, this is, you're talking about a civil war, right?
I hope so.
Well, I don't think we need to have a civil war, because all you got to do is like Brett said, you got to get down, stick to the fundamentals and keep it simple.
So what they said about the blood of patriots has to be shed every now and then.
Right, right.
So this may be the time. I don't know. I don't want to see anybody get hurt either, but, you know, it is what it is.
I'll tell you what. The ones who aren't right aren't going to be willing to shed their blood. Look, let them put the governor on the front line and see how long he pulls the trigger. He's going to send his goons out. He's not going to stand there, right?
Of course.
Right? So all the sheriff has to do is go to the governor's house and arrest him and put him in jail. End of story. You know?
Right.
So I don't know. That should be. I'll see if I can find that article.
I'll send it again. Just keep your eye out for it.
I will. Okay. That sounds. Thanks for bringing that to my attention. We'll have to follow that. See where it goes. You know what? I think we're going to get more and more of this stuff, because everybody's waking up. You know, people are starting to pay attention for a change.
You know? Well, that's what I was thinking, that the deep state is cracking up.
Absolutely. I mean, you wouldn't even be having this battle. I mean, this is a good sign, right?
Right.
I think, like you, look, it's almost, you know, it's almost refreshing to be able to fight something for a change, right?
Right.
This slow burn, this pot they got us in cooking us like frogs has been too much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay, anyway. I yield.
Okay, thanks a lot, Terry. Okay, we got next question. Looks like Paul from Michigan. Go ahead, Paul, you're unmuted.
Yeah, is Brent still on the call yet?
I'm here. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Brent, the fact you brought up your Bible on the call, and by the way, thanks for answering all those questions. You brought up your Bible. I don't want to put you on the spot, but I ordered mine about 2 years ago, and I understand you had some publishing problems. So what is the update on that? Are you going to get it published pretty quick or what?
Yeah, that put me on the spot. I know you don't want to, but maybe I deserve it in your case. Aren't you the fellow that used to send messages? And, well, I won't say this. We can talk later. Did you ever send me a telephone number?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I've been after
him quite a while already. So I've been talking or emailing with Katie too. So, but I'm just seeing you mention it tonight. Uh-huh. I just thought I'd bring it up just a minute.
Well, I'm glad you did. No, I'm glad you brought up the oversight or whatever it is going on. I assume that you say you've talked to somebody about it.
I emailed Katie. Time from time to time at in church, but I'm anxiously waiting for it.
Oh, okay, I see. Well, I'll drag it out and look into it. That thing comes again from New England, and I don't know what the hang-up would be, but I'll look into it. I'll find out, and feel free to try to get a message to me, and if you want to send me your telephone number, if we haven't talked, I'm happy to talk to you.
Okay. Well, I've been waiting.
Send it on the. Go ahead. Send it on the. I was going to say, send it on the web page.
Yeah. Okay. Thank
okay,
you very much,
Paul. You bet.
Okay.
Thank you. Well, I lost my page. Bear with me here. Okay, is that it, Paul?
Yep, thanks. Neil.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we have another person in the queue. I don't know who it is. 0445, give me your name and your state. You've been unmuted. Anybody else wants to get in the queue?
Yeah.
It's wide open, so get in there.
Yeah, hi Gerard. Gerard, could you hear me?
Yes, I can, yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, it's Edward from Connecticut.
How you doing, Ed?
Good. How you doing tonight? I just got in the queue before because just in case somebody might have brought up a subject that I might be able to comment at the end. There was a time somebody had some trouble in foreclosure, you know, because that was my big thing, the foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
And but then it was too late. I was it was the end
right.
of the day. So just in case, because there's some sometimes, you know, there's some mainstream things that could be done just to get by until this other stuff kicks in, you know. And obviously, every bit of time that it could be held off is helpful. Yeah,
I agree.
That's
advice that I give a lot of people that you know the least you should do is try to stall until you get this figured out or we get stuff worked out because, you know, the pot's bubbling right now, you know. And that takes knowing the process. Like you said, you if you know things that you can do to throw a monkey wrench in to slow the process up or whatever. Or even pot. Sometimes you get a victory out of stuff like that. If you drag things out long enough, they get
right.
sick of you. They'll actually drop the case because they get you can actually frustrate them. I've seen that happen. You know?
Exactly. Just do some things. It gives them some leverage, and this way, the longer someone could stay in the house, the better it is, and then different things open up for that person. Too, all kinds of, you know, time is the thing that gives us a little bit of an advantage to be in there.
Right.
Because remember, they want people out for so many reasons. And even when they do take over the house, so-called, you know, their method of doing it, but then you're still there, then there's another process to actually try to remove you. Because remember, you're still in possession. And you have domain
right.
and control still.
Well, then
even
they send the sheriff
that,
out like you're a scofflaw tenant. That's how they do it in New York here anyway.
Right. And then there's different things you could do there. But, of course, the door, as you can see, is closing. But then, you know, that's the whole thing. And I've seen where people have gotten 3 or 4 extensions even after, you know, their service. So anyway, that was as a scene of something
the other thing is banks are really not supposed to be in the real estate business, and I at least the way that I learned it was, you know, there's a point in the year when they have to make a report to the federal government of any loans and properties that are in default, because the federal government takes that amount of money out of their coffers. It's like, because, you know, they leverage a dollar 10 times. So if they got a home that's $100,000 sitting there with the mortgage not getting paid, and they have to go past that reporting time, that's like $1 million to them. You know what I mean? So that was always a formula for buying distressed properties, to go in and try to get that property at the time when just before the report is made out. And a lot of times the bank would float you credit just to get it off their books. Even if they didn't think you were going to be able to pay the mortgage, they would give you a mortgage to get it off of the default book, because it's going to cost them 10 times the amount. So I don't know if that could help somebody that's in foreclosure, if you get somebody to come in and take a mortgage on the thing, you know? I think the report has to go in October, if I'm not mistaken. There's a, you know, maybe different states have different times. But that's something to think about, you know, where you can get somebody, a friend or somebody, to come in and get the bank to give them a mortgage on the place, you know.
That's a very good point, Gerard.
Yeah, and do a short sale or something.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's good. That actually it parallels something that. Just like you're saying, a friend could come in under those conditions. Another condition that happens when there actually is a foreclosure, if a friend could show up and bid on the property, and in some case, the way the foreclosure is structured, that friend would then get it at that price, and then all the debt would then it's closed out. Then, of course, the friend would transfer it back, to the original owner. And all the debt and all the creditors would be closed out, and that's prevalent on a tax foreclosure. All the mortgages would be foreclosed out. There could be a $500,000 mortgage, but on a tax foreclosure, it gets foreclosed out. Any type of tax, city tax or even the sewer tax, and any debt and any lien is completely gone.
Right. Otherwise,
so
they
that's
can't
where
sell
someone
them.
Could help.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so there is another, like you say, those kind of little quirky situations. It doesn't happen all the time, but it is a little bit of a window for someone to go in.
You
got to
think outside the box. Right. Think outside the box.
Yeah. So it's those little things that could help someone, you know, under those conditions. But anyway, I just sort of. I thought I'd just be in the queue just in case something
came
up.
Okay, well, we appreciate it. Thank you. There's always lots of questions, so we'll see what else happens.
We'll see who else comes on.
Okay, very good. The night is still relatively young. Yep, thank you.
Okay.
Okay, we have, thank you, Ed. We have, it looks like, Olander from Florida.
Yeah, I am Valdi from Florida.
Okay.
Do you, Gerard, cut this message from the last week that London, England surpass New York City in number of the homicides for, I think, month of the December?
Oh, I hadn't heard that. And there's not supposed to be any guns in England either, right?
choice of the weapon. Do you know what was it?
I can't wait. You're going to tell me.
Knife.
So we got to outlaw knives next.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? And you know, just if you want to hurt somebody, there's always weapons is available. And in America, it's our duty to own the guns. Some people, you know, protesting. And then look what happened in the London. And I believe that Brits cannot own the gun.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's right. For a lot of years, they took the gun away from.
Yeah,
them.
and they seems like they find a way to hurt somebody. That's what I want to bring up today. I yield. Thank you.
Yeah, that's right. So you know, it's got nothing to do with the weapon. You know, I mean, and our Second Amendment has nothing to do with hunting. It has to do with hunting the government when the government gets out of control. And I don't know, obviously the schools are not teaching the Constitution properly because these kids that think that, you know, the Second Amendment is they don't understand the purpose of the Second Amendment, that this is a militia nation, and that's how we broke away from England, by not letting them take our guns away. And no, we don't need muzzle loaders to fight them. We need semi-automatic weapons, at least, at the very least. I had a woman come into my business, and she says, I don't think anybody needs an AR-15 automatic weapon. I said, first of all, nobody's had automatic weapons around here since the mobsters, you know, back at the turn of the century, they outlawed them, unless you get a license and a tax stamp and all that. And I told her, I said, look at the Second Amendment, and so we have the same like and kind as the army, so that if you get a dictator and he turns the army on the people, at least we can hold them off. And she was very surprised that she left my shop with her jaw hanging down. So, you know, this is what we have to talk about to people and spread the message, because they're so woefully uninformed. And as far as these school kids, they're using them. It's a shame that they're using them. They're innocent. They don't even understand what they're talking about. And they're using them as pawns in this game. And, if we didn't have our guns, if Obama was able to get our guns from us, we'd been all over already. That was Hillary's job, and she didn't make it in there. So you should thank God every day that witch isn't the president. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead, and I got Paul from Michigan. I'm going to open up here. Let's see. Go ahead, Paul. You've been unmuted.
Is Brent still on the call?
I'm pretty sure. You around here, Brent? Hello, Brent. Maybe he's filling up his water again. What time is it?
Just as a point of interest, I also read this week that Australia is now issuing rifles to their policemen in the capital city because of all the crime. So
though they
banned rifles and weapons for everybody else, but the cops need some protection against the gangsters that didn't read the law, I guess.
Right. They keep showing up with billy clubs and the gangsters have got guns.
Or guns, yeah.
Gerard?
Gerard? Yes.
Did Paul go away?
No, I got him open. He's waiting for you.
Oh, I went to punch the unmute button, and I disconnected myself. I apologize.
Oh,
I'm here, Paul. You were having a conversation. I don't want to interrupt what you were saying either. I just want to let you know I'm here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Brent, I appreciate all your answers about those questions tonight. About the question about if the grand jurors can partially fill the petit jury slots. And I take it that you said yes, but then you said a clause that if they're not biased, how can they be not biased if they already heard everything on the grand jury? I'm just questioning that.
Yeah, I say that's right. You make a point. That's why I say I didn't come clear and say yes or no, because it would depend upon a lot of things, and it would depend. That's something that I've never heard of before. I've never read a case about it. If it's happened, maybe it has happened, but I don't know about it. But
I see it might happen. It might happen near our county.
I think that you wouldn't want to do it if you wanted to absolutely not have the appearance of bias.
That's right.
In defense of it, the grand jury doesn't hear all the evidence. They hear a completely different set of evidence than what the petit jury gets. So, you know, you could have a grand juror who might not actually be biased because he hasn't heard all the evidence yet. I mean, the rules of evidence for a grand jury are way more lenient and wider than a jury, right?
Right.
I just don't think it's a good idea unless you had a real physical reason to use a grand juror as a petit jury. I mean, you got to be able to get another person in that town of his peers. There's got to be somebody else that can sit in other than somebody who served on the grand jury to indict the guy in the first place. Because if I was the guy that was indicted, the first thing I would do is say that juror's biased. That's what I would say, right?
Well, yeah, Gerard, you bring up a good point in this way. Just, Paul, I'm sorry, let me just say this real quick, then you go. There's some things I do know for sure. I know for sure that the standard of the law when it comes to bias is that the appearance of bias is bias, according to the law.
Right.
So if you want to avoid all appearances, which we need to do because it gives people confidence in the courts, I think that your point is well taken, Gerard. Go ahead, whoever's Paul, you want to say something?
Well, that's why I asked that question, because I know it has the appearance of bias. But if it's pretty hard to get unbrainwashed jurors to sit on a petit jury today. You know that.
Uh-huh.
So if you don't have a lot to choose from, and you need a couple slots to be filled on the pedicure or from the, you know, I know it's going to look bad, so that's why I asked the question.
Well, look at, I don't think it's so much about people are brainwashed and they get their news from the managed media and that. However, if the jury is not tampered with by the prosecutor or the judge, I think you can get a good decision even out of uneducated people. We've seen it. We saw it in the Bundy's trial. The jury came back with not guilty because they saw the shenanigans that were going on, and they made a good decision. Because you know why? Because they voted their hearts, and that's what they're supposed to do. So, you know, you can't – look, just because somebody's a flaming, you know, leftist or liberal, it doesn't mean he can't serve on a grand jury and look at that case – or a jury, excuse me, a petit jury, and look at that case and come to a good conclusion. Don't forget, there's 11 other people there that he's going to be discussing that with, right? So with 11 people discussing an issue – and if you're keeping things simple and you're keeping to the fundamental principles, you would think that you could come to the right decision, and that's what it's supposed to be about, right?
Right. Okay. Hey, thank you. I yield.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Well, that's the last guy in the queue, unless somebody else wants to get in. We're finishing early tonight. Unless Brent wants to continue to speak about something, you know. You know, Brent, you
I
never
think
really...
You have Michigan Paul. Michigan Paul's in the queue still.
I just didn't. He was... That's who I was just talking to.
My mistake.
Yeah, no, he's done. I don't know. I guess if I go next question, then the queue... Okay, now we have New York Mike.
Gerard, good evening, Gerard. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay, an argument you can have for the long guns is the fact that we needed them when Bundy was being attacked up in Nevada, and that was the only way that they had a show of force to keep the same amount of weapons as what was coming against them. If they would have had pistols or slingshots or whatever, they would have been mowed over.
Yes, and that's a given. And look at out there, everybody carries guns.
Yes,
you know it's a normal thing. I was out in Arizona for a number of years, and you know open carry was legal. I mean, my goodness, you go in the diner, guys sitting at the bar, all you see is the butt of their handgun sticking out from your vest. You know,
right?
And there was no crime. You know. But anyway,
absolutely.
That's a good point. And they, you know, like you
it's
said,
not a gun.
Go ahead.
It's not a gun issue. It's a drug issue. It's a drug issue with these kids that are all being. What is causing these kids to want to kill other classmates, teachers, churches? It's the drugs. The drugs that they're on, psychotropic drugs and the Ritalin, and all of the pressures that these kids are under, plus the CPS stealing the kids and putting them in foster care and drugging them all up. And then
well,
these kids rebel.
There's two statistics that came out of this, these recent shootings, and both of them were 97%. 97% of the school shooters were all on psychotropic drugs. 97% of all the school children, of the school shooters had no father image in the house.
Right.
So those are two powerful things that, you know, we went, oh, guns. No. Look, we got a societal problem, you know, and we have a drug problem with the psychotropic drug. And it's 97. Look, we don't have any. Somebody's feeding back here really bad. You don't see any angry girls shooting up schoolyards. Why is that? You know,
I don't know.
I don't know. I don't think we've had one. You know, so
right.
Because they have the mother image and they know how to be women. I guess I don't know. They're not. Look, these boys are angry. And the schools don't know how to deal with boys. They want to drug them up to make them sit still. Look, a normal boy, he wants to be out and running, and that's just a fact of life. And they want to put them on Ritalin, and they eventually get all these kids on some kind of crazy drug, and that's a problem.
Right.
if 97% of them were on those drugs, either going on them or coming off of them, that's an indictment of those drugs. You know, I mean, how much are they helping? Really, they're creating a monster is what they're doing.
Yep. Well, God bless the mothers, but you know what? A woman cannot make a man out of a boy, and I proved that with my kids, and all the kids that I've seen that grew up with moms, they just don't have what it takes to be a man, because the father figure, like you said, is not there. And
that's right.
They cuddle to them so much that these kids don't know what it's like to have discipline.
Well, they need a role model, and that's where, you know, they used to have big brother programs, you know what I mean, for these mm-hmm. kids that didn't have a father, which was a very good program, actually, you know, to bring a male figure into his life, you know. And
exactly.
Look at,
but it's still not his father. It's still not his father. It's not his DNA. He needs to know what his DNA is.
Oh, the ideal thing is the father. There's no doubt about it. But I know other kids, the father wasn't there, but the grandfather was. And you see, today, we don't have either. Grandfathers are out of the picture, too. You know, I mean, the grandfather was the stopgap for the father. That was the safety net, you know? And
so I think the problem is not the kids. I think the problem is the men, the fathers.
Absolutely, absolutely. But you know what? It's not the father's fault. The family court, if you're a white male, you're done. You're not going to have your kids. They're going to steal them from you. It's all stacked against the father. And you know, they make these rules for child support, and next thing you know, they're taking his license away. They want him to work, but they take his license away. It's a dysfunctional system, let me tell you what. It really, really is. It's horrible. It's disgusting.
Right, then why aren't the guys fighting then?
Well, you know, they don't know what to do, and they've been dumbed down too, you know what I mean?
Right, right.
It's almost not their fault, because maybe the guys have been from fatherless families themselves. You know, we're on how many generations of this crap now, you know?
I'm helping four women that are fighting the foster care system, and none of them have the husbands or fathers in the life of the children, and their kids have been taken away. And these women, they're like bulls in a china shop, and they're going crazy with the system. I mean, with the paperwork and fighting their cases. And
oh, it's disgusting.
It's very disgusting. And I really think that NLA should make it available again to have an action in the federal courts for getting children out of the foster care and for the CPS against CPS.
Well, I do believe it's in our master case. You know what I mean? We did indict the family court system and the child care system. You know, but we have separate cases that we want that we're going to file in with this case when we get this case moving. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, I use some of the paperwork. I use some of the laws and everything that NLA put together in their paperwork, and I structured an affidavit for these women. And they filed them into the courts in their cases, and they got quite a few people removed and fired because of it once they brought it to their attention of the crimes that they were committing. So hopefully we can somehow make a difference and try to get these systems, the court systems, on track.
Well, you know, a big part of it is what you said. When people start participating and filing their own stuff, and it's like our forefathers said, look, the truth will prevail as long as somebody proclaims it. If you never get a chance to proclaim it, it's not going to prevail. And
right.
I know that they don't. I know they make it very difficult to put your paperwork in. They don't want it. They don't want documentation of this stuff, you know?
Exactly.
They're evil, and they break the law all the time. And they change transcripts. They do all kinds of nasty stuff, you know.
And these women that are doing that are scared to death because they've been being followed, and they've been forced out of their homes and living like in hotels and stuff because they don't want nobody to know where they're at. And it's very difficult for them to even function in life. They've lost their jobs. And then one lady lost her car because of it. She couldn't pay for the car. And they're destroying people so bad. And it makes me sick. It really does to see all this happening.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is. It'd be good if we could get, you know, people would band together and for protection. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, look at, we got how many retired vets do we have living in the streets even, you know? Let's put some retired vets together with women that have no husbands that are in the courts, and they can be their bodyguards or whatever. You know,
exactly.
I mean, it's like, you know, and then, you know, they need help to learn. I mean, some women can learn paperwork and do good, but not everybody can do that. You know, they definitely need help to file paperwork, you know, and unfortunately,
right,
you can't go to a lawyer because they're not going to do it.
Oh, no. They've spent over $5,000 on lawyers, and that's why they got their kids taken away.
Yeah,
and then there's a website that I joined. I joined this one website where it's exposing the CPS crimes and the frauds in the family courts. And I got on that case, and I was just going gung-ho and building up in L.A. and, you know, getting people to come up to the group and to listen in and to, you know, check out, to join and to get our paperwork and start to learn. And the response I got from the administrator was, well, what do you got to prove? You know, how many cases have you won? When you start winning cases, let me know. Let us know. It's like, are you kidding me? I said, these things take forever. You know, I mean, it's not an overnight thing, you know.
Well, you know, what's a win? You know, there's a win and there's a win. And like I said before, sometimes you frustrate them and they throw you out, and that's a win as far as I'm concerned. If you can get out from under their clutches, we've had people that we put paperwork in and they got sick of them, and they made sure that there was a settlement to get us the heck out of court because they didn't want us there anymore. You know, when you go in and you do paperwork and you start to become articulate and you're answering the judge and you're doing your own in pro per or whatever you want to call it, sui juris, they don't like that. People are not, you know, we've been into court for many different reasons. And one time we were in court, and of course, this was before they knew better. They had us all in there, and they had all the traffic people and everything. And when our guy went up there and he started answering the judge and holding the judge's feet to the fire, then he got done. He sat down, and the next guy come up, and the judge asked him, you know, do you understand the charges or whatever? And he goes, yeah, I want to do what that guy just did. The whole courtroom was
right. And
you know, right. After that, they would never let us in. They would make special court dates when nobody else was around because they didn't want us there, which is illegal,
exactly. Too,
by the way. It's like a secret court because too many people were saying, hey, what's this about? He's up there with no lawyer, and the judge can't answer him. You know what I mean? They're not used to that on the local courts, you know?
Well, these family courts that these ladies are dealing with, they're having star chamber proceedings behind closed doors, and the moms aren't even invited into these meetings, and they're making all these decisions, summary judgments, and they're claiming that they have all the right in the world to steal these, take these kids and kidnap them.
And it's contrary to the law that's on the book. It's contrary.
Yes.
The Supreme Court says parental rights are the most important right, and that they cannot suspend parental rights without definite evidence and a hearing, and they do it all the time.
Yep.
I mean,
there's
the
no
hearing
due process
implies
whatsoever.
That's right. It implies that you get due process. Now, if you know that and you insist on that, and then when they don't do it, you turn it in or you take it to federal court, that's what they can't hold to, because most people don't do that. So you got to teach people to protest, to file paperwork, and when they steamroll over you, then you take it into a federal court. And I, you know what? I think if you give them the paperwork for the federal court, they don't even want to go there. They, you know, right away they look for a solution after that, you know, to get you
right
out.
Right. What we need is a template for a federal court for a 42, 83, 85, and 86 case against these people.
Yeah, it might be a good idea, yeah. Something
like
that.
And then it would be a lot easier than for, like myself, in order to help these gals, you know, put their statement of facts in there with affidavits and the proofs that they have. And these girls all have proof of all the stuff that they've done. They've got pictures of their kids being beaten up, black eyes, and broken ankles. And they still can't get any remedy once they present this to the courts. And they're preventing the family from getting the custody of these kids, and they just ship them off into these foster homes. And one of them's even been given to a lesbian couple. It's like, are you kidding me? Of course, these lesbians, now they can't get kids. They can't have kids. So they got to get them someplace, and they take them from the good families.
Yeah, it's child trafficking is all it is.
Yeah,
we have one lady that went through all these courts with her son who had a problem. He was autistic or something, and the father was a pedophile, and the judge was a pedophile, and the father and the judge were friends, and they kept throwing her in jail, and she ended up fleeing with him to Puerto Rico, and she went to court there, and they exonerated her. And, you know, Puerto Rico is tied to our courts because they're a territory of the United States. So
the jury,
I guess it was the Pettit jury in Puerto Rico, side with this woman. So she's free in Puerto Rico, but she still can't come back to America because they have warrants for her arrest. They got her down as a fugitive because she took the kid.
Unreal.
But meanwhile, the court in Puerto Rico, the jury in Puerto Rico exonerated her. And really, they should be, look at that, Pettit jury is above the Supreme Court. They should, the American court should be listening to that Pettit jury because it's based on our common law. It's the same thing. You know what I mean?
Right. Isn't that a commonwealth?
Yes, it is. I mean, you know, and like I said, they're a territory of the United States. So they have a lot of our rights over there, you know, by virtue of that. I mean, I don't know all the ins and outs, but it's not like she was in Venezuela or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
It was Puerto Rico. So anyway, it is a mess. You're right. And look, we got to keep putting these things out there so that we can think outside of the box. Maybe come up with it. Look at this course that John's doing is going to give all the necessary things for filing in court, and you'll know how to do it in federal court. When he's done, you're going to have a template there like you're talking about. You're going to know how to file these suits. It's going to be that good. It's going to be that extensive. So that's coming with this court, and when it's done, you'll see it. So we are working on that, okay?
Great. That's exciting. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Okay.
Well, I yield. Thank you very much for your time. Have a blessed night. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, you
good
too.
Night. Thanks.
Okay, we got Deborah from California. Go ahead. You've been unmuted, if you're still there. California Deborah, did we put you? Oh, what happened? Somehow the queue got cleared. What happened? Anybody that was in the queue that wanted to talk, get back in the queue. Go ahead, get back in the queue. Somehow it got cleared out. We had California Deborah. Now we got Felicia from Florida. Well, I'm going to open up Felicia because it's getting late, and if Deborah wants to get back in, go ahead. But in the meantime...
Good evening, gentlemen. How are y'all today?
Good, good. How's it going, Felicia?
It's going. It's rough. I'm about to be homeless again. But I just wanted to know, has the news on indicting Judge Kahn? And I need to know what I need to do to file my case on a federal level here locally.
Well, you're going to file it federally. You're just going to go into whatever federal district court is in your area. That's all. I mean, you could choose one that's, obviously you'll choose the one that's closest to you, I would imagine, unless you have a reason to go to another one, you know.
But, you know, go ahead.
No, I said I don't know what district is next to you there.
Orlando.
Yeah, we'd have to look it up and see. Maybe we could get Jim to help you with that as far as, you know, where you'd file that case.
Yes, sir.
This course that John's given, although you're pretty good with paperwork yourself, is going to help
I'm not.
You with that. No? Well,
I'm not good with paperwork. You guys are.
I tell you, the sheriff and the courthouse didn't know. They didn't know what to do with you guys' paperwork. They was like, "Is this real?" I'm like, "Yeah."
James and I are working on a paper, hopefully this week, to get something out and start going back to all of the non-judicial foreclosures and filing something on it. And I think we have already done a show cause. Again, you know, I'm fixated on so many other things. I just haven't had time to look at it. But James has been pushing me, so this week hopefully we're going to get to it. And maybe we'll do them all at one shot. You know, I think we got about 20 or 30 of them there. And we'll just get them all out. And what we're going to do is I'm not sure exactly what we're going to do yet. But we're going to do something. And eventually, if they don't respond to it, then we will then move it to the grand jury for considered indictment on these judges.
Yeah, I have to do another affidavit. I haven't gotten around to it because I have all the people that was present at my house to kick me out and the time that he called me to kick me out, and I even have video for that. And then I called and got all their badge numbers and everything. So, you know, I have to do an affidavit for that, but I haven't got around to it. It's just been chaos since then, so.
Well, now, as far as Con goes, I think we did give him a show cause, so I don't know. We'll see where that goes. John, like John said, he's working on it this week, and we'll figure that out.
Wait for me, Mr. John.
Yeah.
Wait for my affidavit, Mr. John.
Yeah.
All right, we'll work it out with James, and let's get it going. But we're going to continue to do others. I mean, we're going to continue to go forward with the – I think that Jim's got a few of them, the new ones to do. I don't remember
right.
How many he said, but we got a few. And, you know, we'd love to do the habeas corpuses, but it's just too much work to do those, and we don't have enough people really working. And we need someone with, you know, the background on how to write papers and so on, and to be able to handle that, because I just don't have the time to handle it, you know. And,
yes, sir.
You know, training people is one thing, but then you have to check their work and so on. So.
Yes, sir.
Okay, yeah, and when you're in court, you have to respond in a timely manner too. So that's a problem. You got to be on your toes when you're running that thing too. So we want to make sure that you understand what to do. Okay.
Well, if I had the resources to do it, you know, and I had a place to stay, like, you know, and a computer and all that, I would be capable of doing that. But at this time, I'm about to be homeless again, and I just want this to be pushed because, you know, they got people living in my house, and I don't like that very much because I was the only house on that street, and I had it built from the dirt up, and it's like people are living in my house. It's my house.
It's a terrible situation, I'm telling you.
That's okay, but it'll be okay, because they're going to have to face it. But I yield.
Okay, God bless you. We're all with you.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to open up California Deborah, because I missed her last time. Let's see if I can unmute California Deborah. Go ahead, Deborah. You're unmuted.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, how are you? I really don't
good.
Have a question, but I was just like, I wanted to say about the guy who was speaking about the female shooters in the school, like there is no females. But if you look on Wikipedia, in January 29th, 1979, there was a school shooting, and it was a female. She did the shootings, and like she killed a principal and some kids and things of that nature. And the reason for the killing, they stated that she said that she didn't like Mondays, but that's not the truth. I remember her saying that she was being harassed and bullied by the school principal. But if you look on Wikipedia, you'll see it. It was a school shooting in January 29th of 1979 in San Diego, California. I just wanted to mention that.
Okay, thank you for that. And that's like one of the only ones I've heard. And maybe there's one or two, but, you know.
Yeah.
You know, look, at the statistic on 97% of the school shooters are on psychotropic drugs, and 97% of them have no father figure. And you know what? I'm going to stick my neck out and say, and 97% of them are males, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because it seems that way. So anyway, look, we have a problem, and it's definitely reaping what we sow. That's what it is. It's it's the sin of the nation coming back to bite us.
Yeah.
For letting the schools do what they do and the morality, took God out of the school, so certainly he's not there, right? So,
what's
anyway.
That? Oh, yeah. And she's having a birthday tomorrow, everybody knows.
Okay.
So I just wanted to bring that to your attention, though. Have a good night.
Okay, thank you, Deborah. I don't know what I did here. I got Ed from Connecticut. Go ahead.
Okay, you got me logged in. Yeah, just real quick. I heard you talking with the other caller about John's working on a template.
Well, he's
so
working
that
on
sounds
a course,
really good.
And it'll have like templates in it or whatever. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's great. No, that's great because then that way it gives somebody something to be able to work with, and then be able to be creative with all that, having at least knowledge of what's set up.
When you take that course, at the end of it, you should be able to run a paper into the courts is the long and the short of it, basically.
Yeah. That will be for, to do a federal, right? To get it out of the.
Well, look. Once you learn the procedure, I don't know if he's going to do a federal.
Yeah, you could use the look at the federal is what I'm going to show. A case and the makeup of it. What is the anatomy of it? But you can run a case just like you run a federal case in a state, and it's more sophisticated. It's cleaner. The way they do it.
Right.
So,
excellent.
Yeah,
no,
because the
be
basics
great.
Are all there, right? So you go to the higher standard.
Yeah.
But
one of the things you do in the federal cases, like to see all of your, all of your court cases that you have reference to and laws and everything. They like to see that listed out on a page, and refer to where it's at. And that's look at I do all that in footnotes to begin with, so it's easy for me to collect them all through the once I'm done to just pull them all together, and then throw them on a page and then just seek out the page and give it the page number where it's at, and it's also got a nice cover sheet which isn't too much different really than with the exception of those two things. It's not really too much different with the state. So you're giving the state courts really a little something else. And maybe other places they do that anyway, maybe in the state. I don't know, at least the court cases that I'm familiar with here in New York, where they don't even care about paperwork. They scratch all over it. It's horrible.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
But no. I am
no respect. They get no respect.
They're at least well, and that's the thing. I mean, they'll pretty much accept anything as long as they can't refuse you from filing anything. But no, as far as
they will try. Let me tell you. I've been very with the federal courts, they're the most dangerous because some of these judges, if you get a real evil judge, he doesn't care about nothing, and he knows exactly what he's doing, and I guess he's willing to do the time if he gets caught, and chances are he's not going to get caught. He's going to get away with it because he's protected and all that other stuff. But so from that perspective, it's a problem, in my opinion anyway, because they have a lot of knowledge. Whereas the state courts, there's problems there too. They act more out of ignorance, and, I guess nothing is more dangerous than ignorance in action also. But as far as working with the clerks, much, much better. I've never had a problem in a federal court with filing papers. And they've been very helpful when I miss something. Two cases ago, one of the clerks suggested, to put in a certain code number in there, one of the U.S. codes. And so I already got that in the case. Well, that's real good because he wanted me to put it as a cause of action, And to help get it through the process. But again, they've been very helpful. Never had a problem with clerks. In the state courts, whole different story, though, you know?
They've got to go down and talk to daddy and
come out and give you all kinds of problems and, you know.
Yeah, no, that's why, John, looking for some a template for the federal, because what local is just out of control. You know, it's really like the Wild West. They do whatever they want. Even I find the appellate court is a little bit fairer, and they will work with you like, you know, so even appellate within
the appellate courts, they're very easy. They'll almost do your paperwork for you. I mean, they're extremely simple.
Yeah.
And their paperwork is simple anyway. And they give you plenty of time to do what you got to do. I think they give you like eight, at least here in New York, they give you like 8 months to perfect your case. You know, you do your paperwork to make notice that you're filing, and then you got like 8 months to do it. You know, but we used to give some of these courts a hard time and put the pressure on them. And I know up in Girard County, when we go up there, remember we used to go in there and they would all hide. They wouldn't even come to the counter. They'd go to the back room already trying to get a hold of the judge or somebody to come down and deal with us. You know?
But that would be great, yeah, to have something to get people out of the local court, because that's where it's just, because that's where you got the old boys club, everything's, they're just rubber stamping. They're almost doing the case for them.
Yeah, everything always turns out to be a federal case, because they always abuse you in your due process, so they violate you constantly, and you know it's very easy to move your case into a federal court because of that. And remember, you know, if you're being beat up in the courts, if they're coming out after you and you move it into the federal courts, you know, for lack of due process or whatever the case may be, at the end of the day, the other court cases falls away because they can't come out after you at that point, you know. But as far as the course is going to go, I think we're going to give a lot of paperwork, show on the paperwork on how to fill out paperwork. But the book is going to be more explicit. You know, it's going to be more detailed, and
right.
And there'll be a lot more in the book. The book will be like a reference book. I mean, it should. I'm trying to write it in a couple of different ways. First of all, I want to write it as a book that could be read from front cover to the back. Okay, but you also can jump into a chapter of interest in head of the game, so to speak. I suggest that people at least first read the preface, and I think I'm doing a. Well, I'm pretty sure I'm doing an introduction. I already started one, so I'm going to see where I go with that. So I'm probably going to do an introduction, too. So if there's a preface and an introduction, definitely read those two first, because that kind of primes you for the book. And then if you wanted to look into things like the committeemen, or you wanted to look into how to do a court case, or into the law, or into the judicial process, or the political process, and you could find the chapters. Right now, I think we got about 13 chapters, but it may be more. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how I'm going to break some of these things up yet, but initially I'm just kind of putting together 13 chapters. Now, the book, I'm using the book as, and most of it is written, to be honest with you. I mean, I got to pull things together. I've been working on these things for years, so I got a lot of material to pull together and build a book out of it. That's why I think I can get it done, you know, within 4 weeks. You know, working on as fast as I can. But at the same time, we're doing the course, and the course is being pulled out from the book. Now, the course is not going to be as in-depth as the book, but it'll clearly give everyone a good understanding of all the basics of everything that we're doing. I mean, clearly, we consent to government in numerous ways. The first way we consent to government is we, the people, through, you know, ordained and established the Constitution. I mean, that's number one, okay? So that's our consent of government to begin with. And then, of course, there's the political process. And a lot of people don't understand the political process. The political process has nothing to do as the way our nation was put together, and if we were to operate the way we should be operating, there'd be no room for politics, because politics is nothing but one group trying to get an edge over another group and using legislators to make that leverage, usually. And that should not be. So that doesn't belong there to begin with. But there's a lot of things. You know, of course, the political process, we need to take control there. We've lost total control of that. We need to take it back. We consent through the committee men. We also not only consent on who we put into office, we decide who we take out of office, and we could do that in 90 days. Once the people understand the power and the authority of the committee men, everyone should become a committee man for at least one term. And if you're really only busy around the election time, you know, maybe you have a meeting every I tell you what, I don't think they need a meeting any more than maybe once every 3 months, and then during the election time, maybe they might have to, during that month or so, you might have to meet three times or so,
right,
you know,
right,
to prove the individuals running for office, and then running their papers. People need to take back the political process as much as they need to take back the judicial process. And, of course, our plan is the most known by what we teach is, you know, the administrative process, the administrators. Now, all administrators must take this course. Okay, if they're going to be an administrator, you have to take this course. We have three courses. They are required to take all three. They need to have knowledge, and it's a wrongdoing to keep yourself ignorant if you have the opportunity to get an education here to understand the court system, the process, and how a political process, and even history, you know. We need to understand these things. And we don't have to, you know, look, this is not difficult stuff. It's a matter of just spending time with it and allow it to enter you, you know, through osmosis. You know, as long
as
you understand
to live to live with it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, just like a child, you know, learns to talk. I mean, they didn't work at it. They don't struggle at it. They have they have a desire to communicate. And next thing you know, they're speaking and yelling at you. You know, you got to yell back at them. You know. But,
now, I
but
see
anyway.
What you mean, that this will become part of you. It becomes part of you eventually.
Right.
Now, this course, is this available?
The administrators need to do that very heavily, huh?
Now, the course is available. Which, just to make sure, which course were you referring to?
Yeah, there's a third course we set up. We're taking registration right now. Anybody wants to register for that course, you go to nationallibertyalliance.org. Underneath free courses, you come down and click on government by consent course registration. So there's a registration that has to be done. So people should register right now. Part of the registration, though, if you're already giving $5 a month or more, then you don't have to worry. You'll be qualified to go right into the course as soon as it opens. If you are not giving $5 a month or more, it's a requirement for this course. Instead of charging for the course, we just want people to give $5 a month or more, support what we're doing, and commit to 2 years, you know. So literally, you know, you're talking about $60 a year. I mean, that's a cup of coffee and a bagel once a month. I mean, $60 a year. And for 2 years, so we're asking you to commit for 2 years. Now, we don't really want people to give us $120, and we just don't want that. Because, you see, it's best that it comes in on a monthly basis to pay the bills and keep it going. You know, if we get a lot of money at one time, we think, oh, we spend it, and next thing you know, we don't have any money anymore, and we're struggling again. We need to get that support. We need to see that income coming in and say, okay, now we can do this particular lawsuit. We need to go after
right,
the lawyers.
Right, you can budget properly.
Bar Association.
Right, you can budget properly because it's a steady, yeah.
Right. So we need to go after the Bar Association. We need to go after the judiciary. We need to do those two lawsuits. We also need to sue every single, Board of Election at the state level. In every state, so there's a Republican and a Democratic side of the Board of Elections, so we got to sue both. So we have to sue 100 different, I think they're commissioners there. They're commissioners, aren't they, Gerard, at the Board of Elections?
I believe so.
Yeah, they're appointed.
Yeah.
So we're going to sue the commissioners because they are part of the scam. This wouldn't happen unless they permit it, and maybe they're ignorant to it, but that's not my problem. That's their problem. They need to become educated, and they should repent and say, hey, I didn't know, and repent to it and start doing the right thing. Otherwise, we're going to sue them. We're going to take their money and force them to allow the people to come in and take back their political process. And we have a plan to do this, and it's a very unique, simple plan. To take over a state can be done very quickly with just a few people. And this book is going to teach that, how the process is going to be done, how to do the paperwork on that. I mean, all of it. We're covering everything we know that we've learned over the past, I don't know, 12 years, or I don't know, I don't know how long we've been doing this, 15 years
least,
or whatever.
At least 10 years, yeah.
Yeah, well, 2007, I think, is when we did start, you know, well, that's when I started with the Ron Paul movement.
Yeah.
Was it 2007, I think he was running for president. And so anyway, it's going to be a very in-depth book, and the course is going to be a pretty good course. And like I said, the book is going to be written so that you can read it from front to back, and you should. You can jump around if you really need to have a certain piece of information, like if you want to learn about a court case, you can jump into that and learn how to write a court case. But you also want to jump into the law side of things, too, and also the Supreme Court ruling cases that we might choose to discuss, and really get your homework going there. But meanwhile, the whole book, again, in itself is a reference book. You know, we'll have a table of contents. You'll be able to find the categories very quickly, and use it in whatever way that you see that you need it, either to work in the political process and to take control of that, or to work in the judicial process and take control of that, or to file a court case and take control of that. We'll give a lot of tips and ideas on how to control a case and what the major points are. We already know everything they try to pull against us, so we've already established a strategy on how to deal with it, and we deal with it beforehand. And I'm going to show, I'm probably going to use the New York case, so people should read that case carefully and a few times over, because I might use that very case in order to teach how to write a paper, okay? And in that case, we cover all these points, a lot of strategy, standing strategy. We didn't add in there jury tampering, but we will deal with that. We probably should have, because we are expecting to get a jury. But matter of fact, I think we'll probably add that as an addendum, so that they understand that when it's time to pick the jury, you know, you guys ain't picking it, because you guys are only going to stack them, and we're going to have to go get the grand jury to consider an indictment against the judge and the prosecutor if they're going to put their hands in and dip into the jury. So, you know, we're covering everything in it. And we'll do the best we can, and we'll take it from there. And hopefully people will buy the book, you know. Obviously, we're going to sell this book.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's going to be a good addition to the NLA arsenal of weapons
and
against it. Yeah,
I'd like to believe.
Sounds very good.
I like to believe it's the book that everyone really needs, the handbook that all we the people need to have in order to learn the things to be free, how to consent to our government from every angle, how to get into the courts and defeat these people and to make sure we get our court of records or Article III courts. You know, this is what the book is going to be about, and everyone should really utilize this book for that purpose. I don't know of any other book out there that does what we're trying to do, you know. Again, these are the basics, the ABCs, and also a little bit of an advanced education at the same time. But again, you know, when you look into law, real law, true law, like the law of the Bible, the law of the land, it's exciting. It's interesting. It's liberating.
Oh, yeah,
it's fulfilling. It's like and it's you know, it's a wow factor, in my opinion. So it's not boring. You know, people think law is boring.
I think, yeah, I mean, I think it helps people be a better person. Once you know more about the law, then you could really see what's fair and what
absolutely
is expected of us, you know,
and
to do
we're
the
gonna,
right
and
thing.
And we're going to have to, some people are going to get frightened in the beginning, because we have to lay out the truth of the matter and what is required in order to have liberty. You can't have liberty unless God blesses you to have that liberty. You can't earn liberty. You can't take liberty. You can't seize liberty. You can't require liberty. Liberty is not for you to have, but it's only for you to have if you are blessed with liberty. Our founding fathers understood that, and that's why they wrote that this government was to secure the blessings of liberty. They understood that. And that's a hard one for people to get their minds around, because they've been bombarded for the last 40 or 50 years, not to even mention the name of Jesus Christ, not to think about the Bible. And, look, people are so interested in the Bible sometimes, like especially now with potential end-time events happening, or it seems to be happening. And people get interested, but they look for the strange things. They want these other books that aren't in the Bible. Well, they haven't even read this book yet. And we have people that want to get a constitutional convention, and we haven't even used this constitution yet. Why don't we use this first, see if it works, and then we'll think about having a constitutional convention. And I'll assure you, if we exercise it the way we should be exercising it under the blessings of God, I can guarantee you, I can absolutely be assured that people won't even think about having a constitutional convention, because this the process that we have, the republic that we have created, a rule of law by the people, okay, the republic under God in our case, okay, that particular process we've created, it's amazing how great a job our founding fathers did. I don't know that they missed anything, but we haven't had time to really truly exercise it enough to really be able to get that perspective to say, hey, maybe we are missing this or that. But it's like right on. It's doesn't miss a beat, doesn't miss anything, in my opinion. The key thing, again, is three documents. It's not just the Constitution. There is first there's the foundation, which is the Declaration of Independence, which is a covenant with God. People need to understand that. And again, if you can't swallow it, you're going to have a problem with liberty, and you're not going to get it right. You're going to have problems. You have to come to that understanding. That's number one. And then the Constitution itself is the framework, okay? And the capstone is the Bill of Rights. Now, the three together, and the Bill of Rights is really what you measure all understanding of law through. I mean, as far as dealing with our government, how we apply the Constitution to them, you measure it out with the Bill of Rights, as long as it passes the muster, as long as it doesn't offend or be repugnant to the Bill of Rights and other rights, because again, we just don't have the Bill of Rights alone. We have a lot more than that. It extends even further. The right to have a constitutional officer, that's an unalienable right. The right to have a just court. For free. I mean, we've already paid through our taxes. We shouldn't have to pay anyone money to go into a court. This is a right, an unalienable right. The right to travel, a lot of things. We have a lot of rights, and they're plain and clear and obvious. Anything for liberty. And again, people have another problem because they don't understand the nature of people. They have a big problem with this idea of true liberty, because now code enforcement officers are no more. We got to get rid of them, all of them. People are frightened of that. But they don't understand that we have been created as a social being. And there's a video out there. It's a six-part video put out by PBS. It's called The Brain. And I think it's number five, okay, which really gets into discussing on how social we are as a people, okay? We thrive to be with people. No man is an island type thing. And those who are separate from others and separate themselves for whatever psychological reasons or whatever, they do have problems, and hopefully we can pull those people out. But that's where the dangers of society is in. But that's like one in maybe 10,000 or something. Most people are willing to follow the rules. I'm going to still stop at red lights, and I'm going to wait and yield and wait for the green light. But at 3 o'clock in the morning, I come to that light, and I hadn't seen a car in miles, and I come to an intersection with a light, and there's nobody anywhere. Well, I'm not sitting at that light no more. It's not necessary. Making a turn on a red light, which is good pretty much. It's the law here in New York anyway at this point. But
in Connecticut also, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look at how many people, you hit the highways and it's 60 miles an hour. How many people do 70 or 75 or 80? Hey, why not, on a highway? You know, if there's a road that says 35 miles per hour and maybe a school sign up and says 25 miles per hour, well, I'm going to keep that limit on that area because there's a reason for that being at 35 miles an hour or 25 miles an hour with a school sign up.
Right.
I don't want to hit anybody's kid, you know. So, I mean, look, and people yield to each other. And we have two videos on our website. You can go watch them. Matter of fact, I put the brain up. I forgot I did this. If you go up to education, okay, is it education? Where did I put this? No, go up to news. Go up to news. There's two, come down to spontaneous order. If you click on spontaneous order, I think there's two videos there that clearly show the traffic lights are not necessary. You know, all we have to do is let people go and yield to each other and put some basic signs up, and people will obey, okay? But there's two great videos out there on spontaneous order. Also, next to that is another page, which you click on, called The Brain, and I've got all six parts up there, okay? I want to comment on the last part. I haven't had a time to comment on that. Hopefully this week I'll get back up there and finish my comments on this particular program. But it was so... It moved me so much, and it really opened my understanding to people, myself, and the world around me. I was really blown away by it, and it also answered a lot of thoughts and wonders that I had, you know, of my own over the past years of my life, and they came to some conclusions that are so obvious, and it blew my mind, and I say, wow, this is really, really interesting. Everyone should watch this. You'll understand the nature of yourself and people, you know, perception, the brain. What is reality, you know? And so it's really a good, definitely everybody should do this. Matter of fact, I'm even going to mention it in a book. It's so important. You know, the first one is what is reality? The second one is what makes me? The third is who is in control? Fourth, how do I decide? The fifth, why do I need you? See, this is the most impressive one, is number five. And if you can watch them 1 through 5 in that fashion, it's probably best, because I just feel that way. But you can go and watch just number five. But that's the one that talks about how people need people. We are social by nature.
Absolutely.
And we yield to each other. We're courteous to each other. I've seen this all my life. And I come from the Bronx, and yeah, there's a few bad neighborhoods that had problems and you had to deal with. But generally speaking, the Bronx when I was a kid, and you know, most people were nice, polite, helpful. I was taught to be that way, you know, and that's New York City. How much more in the country and in, you know, the farmlands and other places, you know, people are polite to each other. They're courteous. They yield to each other. They go out of the way to each other. That's the normal way of people. I don't see people as being ugly, mean, and destructive, although we're training our children to become that way. We are doing that. Our children are destroyed. I don't know how if people realize how serious a problem we have with our schools. They are totally destroyed. If you can take your children out and homeschool, you need to do it. I'm thankful that I homeschooled my children, but it's even worse today than ever. It is so destructive. You're not even going to, you're 18, 19, 20 years old. If you got kids in school, by the time you're going to wonder who these people are because you're not going to know them. That's how bad it is in these schools. And we need to take back our schools. We need to take control. We need to decide what the curriculum is. You know, and that's part of our plan here at National Liberty Alliance, too. You know, we need to change this nation to bring us back to a nation under God and under the republic that our founding fathers were blessed to bring us to. And that's where we need to get to. Because we've lost our way and we're in big trouble. But I see we went way over the line here. So
yeah, we're way over.
You know, John, yeah, I'll just conclude this 30 seconds here. No. Yeah, you hit on all the good points. Those, it's like things have been going bad, like it's too long, too far. It's just constant. So and you're right. Every single area, even though you started out with just with the judicial system, it actually is affected every
system.
Oh, what
started out
okay?
With the committee man, yeah. But go ahead.
The committee
we
man,
ended
yeah.
up
and
focusing
that,
in on
right,
first.
But then. Exactly. Then you went on that. But no, in short, it's just really, I'm just so happy to hear you say that in the schools and everything else. And just one other comment on that book. It seems that book it could be
something that could really put NLA on the map and get NLA to another level and get people interested. They look at the book and say, where did this book come from? You know, where'd it come from? And it's NLA, then they look at NLA. This could almost be like a cornerstone situation. You know, it's like there's a certain term for it, but it's kind of late to come up with
it. This is what I'm going to suggest to people. I mean, the name of the book, I believe, is going to be called Liberty Lost. And ultimately, the book is all about finding it again. But in any event, what I'm going to suggest to people, and it's up to, look, I can only do so much. Anyone can only do so much. We have to work together, and the people need to push this and drive this. You know, this book here, I'll probably order maybe 10, 20, or 30 books myself, and I'm going to mail them out to individuals. You know, particularly I want to send one to the president. Hopefully he'll read it. I want to send one to Jeff Sessions. Hopefully he'll read it, you know, and a few other people. Grassley, hopefully he'll read it. If other people bought a couple of these books and maybe get one to their sheriff, okay, even though we have a sheriff's book, this book is more, much, much more. And anyone, look, at anyone else that they think is important to get to, you know, maybe someone like, what's his name? Goodness, I used to watch him. Oh, I forget. What's that guy who was on Fox and a few other places, and now he's got his own thing? But anyway, there's a few individuals, people that were on the radio, and they still are on the radio.
That you'd like them to see that, exactly.
Hopefully, I get them a book, and hopefully they'll take off with it, you know? But again, you know, I strongly will suggest that anyone running for committeeman, anyone that wants to take the nation back, anyone that's running for administrator, anyone who wants to know how to get into the courts, these are the people that should be buying this book. And hopefully we can make a curriculum for maybe high school or shall it maybe eighth grade.
I'd like to talk
with the people from the NCC Center Studies. What is it? National Center for Constitutional Studies. So it's NCCS.org, I think they are. But they've got great books. I mean, they've got the real Thomas Jefferson, the real George Washington, the real Benjamin Franklin. They got The Making of America. I mean, they got great, great, great books, you know, 5,000-Year Leap. Okay, these books, every one of these books, because I've read most of them and I'm still reading some of them, but these books are written in such a way that they could be textbooks for children in school. There's the curriculum to really understand America, who we are, who our founders were. Because all we have to do, because I'm going to talk with these people, all we have to do is really put questions in between the chapters. Okay? That's all. And that's an easy job. And we can, you know, we can offer to do that for them and ask them if they would print these books out in that fashion. You know, you buy these books, they may be $20 a piece, but if you buy a case, you get them for $5 a piece, you know?
Yeah.
And we go out and buy a few cases and bring it to the schools, require this as a curriculum of our children, you know? We need to get the Bible back into the school. That's the best way to learn to read. People may have a problem with that, but hopefully when they come to understand, you can't have liberty without God, and the king of the court must be king of the court, or you'll have a man that's a king. We'll be back to where we are. So we gotta become more mature. We have to change. We have to bend our knee. We have to learn. And we have to see what our founding fathers really hammered out for us, because people don't really understand, realize, or appreciate what they really created for us. So,
well, I'll tell you, this has been...
12:25, John. It's getting late.
Well, okay. Hey, God bless, John. This has really been, what a way to finish a call, very invigorating, and this book is really, you're hitting on all 8 cylinders, and we'll talk again. Thank you.
Okay, appreciate it. All right, we're going to end the call for now. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Lord Willard, we'll see you next Monday. Thanks. Thank you.
it's bad.